It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, and Alex Lindsay, the whole gang, is here to talk about the latest Apple news. Kanye West running out of money. The Grammys saying, don't use those streaming services. We'll talk about Apple Music, iOS 9.3, due any minute now, and a whole lot more. It's all ahead. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 494, recorded Tuesday, February 16th, 2016. Roll up the rim to win. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Plus, with a developer platform, you can customize the code behind any Squarespace design. Enter the offer code MacBreak to get 10% off Squarespace. You should. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. This is the Kanye West Scholarship Edition of MacBreak Weekly. Joining us right now to help raise money for little Kanye is Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times.
That's right, Leo. And, you know, if we can raise just one more dollar than we did for the Willie Nelson bailout, then I think that all the good work that I and other fellow entertainers have come here to the entertainment capital of the world to provide will have been worth it.
Let's not forget, 50 Cents has promised 50 cents for every dollar pledged. Also with us, Renee Ritchie from somewhere, once again in Winnipeg, it looks like, iMore.com.
Yeah, it was minus 40 in Montreal, so I came to Winnipeg to warm up.
What is it in Winnipeg?
It's only like minus 11. I don't know what's happening. The world is upside down.
It really got that cold in Montreal? You're paying
with
for
the wind chill, yeah.
For December, yeah.
I know.
Wow. Also here from the Indiana Jones warehouse for biblical artifacts, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The Pixel Corps.
Glad to be here.
Yes.
See the guys working, moving artifacts. There he is. They're moving artifacts back and forth.
Wow.
Alex Lindsay's overstocked furniture warehouse. At the end of the season, the 2016 sofa sleeves are coming in, and we got to make room for them. And you know what that means? Fantastic deals.
We're blowing them out to the bare walls.
Speed rail. They're mostly made out of speed rail, but they're very comfy. We put some sound foam over top of them and some moving blankets. It's our own special.
Tip of the hat to Iliad of the user-friendly comic. For some reason, he's rerunning comics that must seem baffling to many of his readers today. This is the cartoon for February 16th, but it's a return. See, he's been like that for days. I don't know if you should do this, Sid, but it might help. Well, then your head be on it. Tech TV. Wah! The wound wasn't open enough for you, eh? Too soon? That is a 10-year-old comic. It's got to be.
Still a very hip reference.
Somebody tweeted it to me. Thank you for letting me know. But I just wonder how many of Iliad's readers, thank you, Doug Ferguson, for letting us know about that, know what they're talking about. Maybe a few do. That would be
the ones that matter, Leo.
That'd be sweet. The ones that matter.
It's a shibboleth.
What the hell's a shibboleth?
Oh, West Wing moment.
It's a word I know from the West because they used it in the West Wing. It's like when people of a certain religious order were being persecuted, there was sort of a secret word that if you use in conversation, only the people who belong to this order would know it. And so it's safe to talk freely because you're among friends.
It's a shibboleth. Perfectly.
Yes.
Or in modern day politics, a dog whistle.
Faith is the only shibboleth.
Thanks to Beef Team and the gang at the Purdue University Department of Animal Sciences for sending us not one, not two, but four pairs of livestock judging gloves.
Please tell me they have Beef Team like baseball jerseys. I totally have $50 for one in an XL.
Dr. Ron Lemonanger and Scott, who is the beef extension specialist, and Scott Radcliffe, who is the swine nutrition expert. And Phil Reed from the Distance Learning Coordinator, and they're putting together
Team Swine
at Purdue University, and they're putting together a studio much like ours for distance learning. And so they came over and visited, and they sent the entire team livestock judging gloves. So we're ready. Bring on.
Why does one need the glove to judge the livestock? What part of the livestock are you judging, Leo?
These seem fairly heavyweight. In fact, it even says... These gloves work.
I bet they do.
I bet they do. You know, I'm going to save a pair for Father Robert. I'm wearing these from now on. They just, I think they have that look about them.
So judgy.
I mean, I manipulate a person.
I think there's a certain amount of tactile feel that you still have to have as yeah. you're, you as know, you're inspecting the.
Stroking the withers.
Cough, pig, cough.
Turn your snout and cough.
We do have some Apple news.
A big bottle of Woolite with that, because that looks like you might have laundering problems with that. That's
yeah. Yeah. It's going to be part of my new delicates load. So John Gruber, kudos to John Gruber on the talk show, scoring one of the biggest Apple interviews you can get. Not just Eddie Q, but Craig Federighi coming on his show to talk about many things. I'm sure you all listened.
Yep.
I tell you, my where I thought it was an interesting, John, to his credit, brought up the number of articles, including Walt Marsberg's article about Apple software being crap. And I thought Eddie and Craig didn't quite get the criticism. Eddie said, well, it's because we're trying new stuff. You know, nobody likes change. And but we're making it's better. It's getting better all the time. But just people don't like the change.
A lot of us want change. That's
not enough change.
We just want change in places that they're not changing. That's the issue. Like iTunes.
It's kind of a.
He made it sound like a project management issue. Like when you change Final Cut, everyone gets super upset. Right. And iTunes, in many ways, is more important than Final Cut to more people. And if you just change it, there's huge ramifications. So what? At least to my ears, it sounded like they were carefully staging things. Like Apple Music now starts moving iTunes to the cloud, and you do that step before you move the rest of it. Because if you just try to move it all at once, all you have is a bunch of broken workflows. Like Jim Dalrymple, who ripped his 10 million songs, suddenly doesn't exist in that world anymore. And they have to actually manage. It's a window. It's a Microsoft problem. You have to manage a massive installed user base as you transition them to a new platform.
Do you feel it's responsive, though? I mean, for instance, my biggest beef besides iTunes is the new Photos, which is just a constant pain and has not worked at all on any of my machines. Now I know I'm not the only one, and I know it's not universal. So
that's less acceptable to me because that's a fresh start.
It's brand new.
If they're starting fresh. That thing should perform.
And he implied that it was because I didn't like change. Oh, you're just not used to the new. No, it can't. It loses my photos.
I had a problem with that as well. I thought, for instance, I think that was a good point to make in the change from Final Cut to Final Cut 10, where it was they were pretty much throwing away what existed and creating a new, pretty much a brand new product.
iMovie 2, right?
But yeah, pretty much. But iMovie Pro, if you want to say, but not in a denigrating way. But what people have been complaining about, Walt Mossberg, all these commentators, are not that, gosh, this doesn't work for my workflow anymore, but that what it says on the side of the box is that it will do this, and it's not doing that, or it's doing that in such a sloppy way that it's almost unusable, and that this has become such a bad product for me that I'm trying to find other ways to any way possible to avoid using this app. So it's not likely that a manager is going to say, yes, our app is total garbage. And
no,
it's not as though any of these apps
that.
Are total garbage. But it's hard to find a way to phrase in terms of, we appreciate that this is a perception and we are eager to address that perception through rapid updates. I didn't really hear that in the interview.
Steve Jobs very famously, when Walt Mossberg properly savaged Mobile Me, brought the Mobile Me team into the auditorium and said, our good friend Walt Mossberg is turning against us. You guys are destroying my company and you're all fired. Now we don't know what internal things internally Eddie and Craig might be saying, but I would have loved to hear at least some acknowledgement. You know, even Microsoft, which has had a horrific problem with its Surface, the Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4, and has acknowledged that yes, there's a problem. We're working on a fix. Even they, you know, they said their answer was. it's a tough computer science problem, but at least that's acknowledging there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I'll make a Chipotle analogy where so long as you admit that you have sanitation problems at your stores, and so long as you acknowledge that's a big enough problem that you're willing to do extraordinary things to address them, that's how you get people to not write them off completely.
Right.
And right now, I think that Apple really needs to have a almost an iPhone 4 antenna sort of response to this, saying that we're definitely here is the faults that we have found in this. Here are the weaknesses. We knew there's going to be rough points, but here is what we're working in order to address them. Because right now it looks like for a few years, I think there's been a perception, at least, that there are products that and strategies that Apple absolutely cares about. And then there are the products and strategies that they don't care enough about to cancel outright, but they're willing to let them continue to go. So when you have major app suites that haven't been updated, haven't had a major update in 2 or 3 years, when you have major services that kind of work but kind of not, you feel as though, well, look, if this were something they could mill out of a block of aluminum, this would not, it would not have these problems, or if it had that problem, it would be fixed immediately. But the fact that this is simply a word processor that they haven't put in a commercial or haven't really talked about in years means that they're just willing to let people suffer.
I'd also argue that from Apple's point of view, that there's a perception of a problem should be a problem. Even if they internally believe that we understand what's wrong, we're managing this transition, we think that people are misunderstanding this part, but we know why, that there is this massive perception from Walt Mossberg down should be treated as though the software is absolutely in that state. Like that perception should be treated as reality regardless.
Yeah. The fact that so many people who really get Apple are making these accusations, that's such a huge warning sign.
Well, and I think that the part of the problem is that they're not touching the thing that everybody talks about, which is iTunes. And then they are, you know, twisting around things that were working relatively well before, which was iPhoto, and now it's not. Very frustrating. I mean, I find it very frustrating as well. I mean, I find photos to be annoying, you know, to say the least.
iTunes is totally understandable because, like, and I go back to, they gave iTunes an impossible job. It's hard to argue that one app can do everything that iTunes does. And the answer is to stop it doing all those jobs. But that means, what do you do with Windows people syncing iPod Nanos that don't have Wi-Fi connectivity? What do you do with billions of dollars in transactions that are being gone through that store every day? Because you can't just destroy it and build another bridge. You have to very carefully build a whole bunch of new bridges and then move people over. But that is a process, and they're not managing expectations of that process. It's not like they're saying, good breakout app coming.
If you're not a Windows user, I mean, I don't know how much. I mean, I go into iTunes maybe once every couple of weeks by accident because I plug my phone into my computer. I mean, you know, I think for a lot of us, we've kind of, you know, we're watching on Apple TV, we're watching on our iPhone, I guess I don't really view my laptop.
Hundreds of millions of people still sync iPods on Windows, so that's a big migration right. They have to do.
Right, but they're used to pain.
The thing is, this is probably also that Apple historically is a hardware maker first and foremost, and even though it's key that software work well. I mean, as Steve Jobs said, if you want your software to work, you got to make the hardware too. I think there probably is internally a little bit of a feeling like, well, we make our money on the hardware, we'll do what we can on the software. As we talked about last week, software is hard to fix. You can't throw money or people at it. That doesn't help. That makes it worse often, and maybe what's happened.
Well, and I think that fundamentally, if you look at the iWork platform, you know, all the Keynote and Pages and everything else, in many ways, that's Apple's defense. You know, they were, you know, that was a historical thing of them being very, very exposed when it looked like Microsoft Office might leave the Mac platform. And so they want to make sure that they can continue to provide those right. those tools. They want to keep on building that out. But yeah, I don't think that they're not putting in the kind of energy that Microsoft puts in.
Yeah, if software's only there to defend your platform, that's not motivation.
No, I think so. But I think that and I think that, like, for instance, if you look at the iWork, you know, all of those things, the only thing that is really that everyone really wants is true collaboration. I mean, that's what right. keeps everybody on Google Docs is being right. able to, we're all opening a doc at the same time. We can all work on it at the same time. I mean, that's what I mean, that's why we use Google Docs. It's definitely not because of the quality of the editing tools. You know, it is because, you know, or the picture.
Well, everybody's different. If you're a writer, it's not about collaboration. It's about the quality of the editing tools. It just depends.
Well, then it's about responsiveness. The problem is if you're a writer, it's about responsiveness, which Pages does not give you. You know, so that's the issue.
There's an interesting thing. Like with a lot of these apps, any workflow that does not fit your use case is indistinguishable from bloat. So if you use iTunes just to listen to Beats One Radio, you don't understand why all this other crap is in there. And if you use it just to sync your iPod Nano, you don't want all that Apple Music stuff. Why is that even there? And then you factor this in that iTunes isn't made by the software organization. It's not made by Craig Federighi's org. It's made by Eddie Q. So is iWork. So is a bunch of other stuff. So you have – when you say Apple software, that doesn't mean just Apple software.
Right.
Maybe someone in Federighi's organization would do a totally different job with the same task.
Well, we've been talking. I look like Hunts Hall all over
Gomer. Sudden,
years.
we've been talking about
surprise,
this for years. Yeah.
Surprise.
And
yeah, it's absolutely not a new suggestion that maybe it's certainly time, I think, for Apple to break up iTunes into task specific apps. I mean, like you said, that people use iTunes on Windows to sync devices. It's such a great opportunity to create a bespoke app just for that purpose and optimize it for that purpose. Just last week, I was doing a thing that involved me having to dip into iTunes and find the iTunes store. I've been using this interface regularly for a couple of years, and there's still that. Have you ever had that moment of interaction where your hand has literally paused above the keyboard because mm-hmm. you have to scan every single dingbat on the entire user interface to think about where do I click to get to here? And it's always wrong. And so it's just, I mean, it's there. No user should care about the complexity of Apple's problem. It's all about what experience am I going to get with this app, and they're just getting bad experiences.
Yeah. Apple has issued a recall for their USB-C charging cables. Actually, it's a replacement program. I don't know if that's quite a recall. And it doesn't affect all MacBooks, but it is for the 2015 MacBooks. You can tell if your cable is affected if you look at your MacBook. And it says, designed by Apple in California, assembled in China, and does not include a serial number after that text. If you registered with a mailing address, they'll mail you one by February automatically. And if you didn't, you can go to the Apple retail store, make an appointment with a genius, and they'll do the replacement as
well.
What
a nightmare USB-C cables have turned out to be.
I know.
It's flabbergasting.
We talked about it on Twit. When was it that we talked about it? Or Twig, I guess, last week. Because, of course, Benson Huang, who is, and I'm sure I'm sorry, Benson, I'm ruining your last name. Benson Hung, I don't know, who is a Google engineer, has been going on Amazon. It's been wonderful reviewing USB-C cables because some can actually – this recall doesn't mean the cable will damage your MacBook. It looks like it just won't charge or charge intermittently.
Yeah.
But there are cables, USB-C cables are that out there that will damage your MacBook by drawing too much power from it. They're not all up to spec. So we were talking about this on Wednesday. I should mention it here too, since MacBook users use Type C cables. Always make sure that you, if you're buying a cable online, look for Benson approved. Benson.
Yeah, but that's such a hostile user experience.
I know.
It's flabbergasting.
I know.
We just tell people to buy them at the Apple store.
Yeah, of course. If you get them from Apple, you're not gonna have a problem. He said. That he doesn't really test C2C cables because those are not poorly made. It's the adapters that go from C to old USB and stuff like that that are problematic.
They don't regulate the power, I think, is the reason.
Exactly.
So it just draws far too much.
It draws too much power, and that can actually hurt your MacBook. So don't charge something, for instance. But a C2C cable, which is actually what Apple's replacing, those generally are okay. So you could, if you're using somebody else's cable, I'm sure it's fine. I don't know if it's fine, but you could. I got every C because I have a Type C phone. The Pixel C is Type C. The Chromebook Pixel is Type C, and my MacBook's Pixel. So I have enough C stuff now that I have all the USB-C doohickeys.
It's sort of like that old comment: "Don't use the Rev A board." Like, we're so excited to get USB-C, but now we have to hash out all the problems with it at the same time.
Well, I'm waiting to get a new Mac. I'm hoping they're going to announce a new MacBook. I would really like.
So the
that.
Thing is, though, that I, like the more you see about Skylake, the less there is to
I
really
know.
Be interested.
That's where Microsoft's problems are with Skylake, right?
And at the best of cases, it sounds like the performance boost you get is negligible. Like, yeah, it's a few percent. It's a single digit percentage point increase in certain tasks. And that to me is like problems plus that. I'll be happy with Broadwell.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Amazing. Like, I just want Type-C on both sides, right? That's all I want. That's what the Chromebook Pixel does. Then you could charge on one side. I even have a C cable for my, Andy, I bought that and I love it. The Samsung T1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I bought the terabyte one. I have my whole life is on this thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's been I wouldn't say a game changer, but I've gone from bringing a terabyte external drive if I think I'm going to need it to just always having it. I should point out that some Twitter followers pointed out that Samsung has announced but not shipped or given a price yet on a USB-C version of that same drive. But I can't imagine it's going to be cheaper than $165
for two terabytes.
Yeah, but
come on, Andy, you want it.
I think you should definitely buy one.
You should definitely
buy one and tell me how you like it.
I even have a Minecraft server on here in case I ever want to just play Minecraft. Man.
Yeah,
that's nice. That's all my documents for my 5K MacBook Retina. Now, a number of people tweeted after you recommended this. And appropriately, that was it 9to5 Mac. Somebody said, as you did, Mac Observer. I don't trust this thing because you have to install Samsung drivers on it on the Mac to use it, and on Windows, by the way, to use it.
Well, you don't.
But you don't have to. You have to wipe it, though, right?
Well, what it is that this is a standard. It's a standard drive. However, it supports two brand new low-level storage features that macOS does not support yet. So if you want smart, if you also want this new solid-state protocol that will make certain kind of writes and reads faster, but not necessarily in all cases, then you want those two drivers. The stupid thing that I think Samsung did was making it so that the only visible partition on the shipped drive is the 128 megabyte partition that just has the installer on it.
Well, I can tell you why they did that. I know why they did that. For the encryption. So
That's something standard for pretty much every drive. There's so many drives. Almost every drive that supports encryption will have some sort of thing that it wants you to walk through in order to get the encryption working.
And I initially took it off. I did what you did, which is I installed it on just one Mac, wiped it, made a terabyte drive. And then I looked at all the whole disk encryption solutions out there and ended up putting the Samsung software back on it because you don't want to carry around. I mean, I got the big one, which means my whole life is on here. I don't want to carry that around unencrypted. Be easy enough to lose.
And does it affect speed to have it
encrypted? No. I looked at benchmarks. It does not. That's another reason to use a Samsung kernel extension. I agree with you, Andy. It makes me nervous to put a Samsung kernel extension on my Mac. But they say it's based on Apple's open source drivers.
Yeah. I looked at the drivers. I don't have my notes in front of me, but I wouldn't put it on my own computer if I weren't able to trust the drivers or weren't able to remove them. There are actually instructions on how to remove the drivers right in the README doc that comes up on the Samsung installer.
Right.
So if you don't want it, it is annoying. You run the installer, then the entire terabyte will be visible, and then at that point you can just simply run Disk Utility, reformat it to it also ships as a fat volume, which is what most drives ship as. You can reformat it as a macOS journaled volume, and then at that point, if you want to remove the drivers, by all means, remove the drivers.
I opted to stick with the drivers. I put it on all my Macs. In fact, I like HFS Plus so much that I formatted it that way and bought Paragon's driver for Windows so I can use it on a Windows machine. And so you'll see here what's happening. If you look at my screen, you plug in the T1 and you get this little, this is the 128 gig part. What is it? 128 gigs, 128 megs. I can't remember.
Megs.
Meg partition, that Andy said, and that's what all you see because what's on there is the Mac and Windows, software to unlock it. And then you enter your password here and it unlocks it and you can show it, cause it's just dots. And then at that point, you see it mounts the full terabyte, which is awesome. And now it's transparent, and I can continue to use it until I unmount it. I think it's just really...
Yeah. The advice I give to anybody who encrypts an external drive is make sure you're only using that for data that you are religiously backing up.
Oh yeah.
Because the only thing, especially on an SSD, you're not giving up a lot of speed, which is something that is a problem with a mechanical drive. But it does mean that if you do lose the password, and remember, you might put this in storage for a couple of years and forget about it, but then want to get it back. You really can't get data back off of an encrypted drive if you don't have the password, or if something happens.
But that's what you want. I mean, that makes me happy to know that.
That's what you want. I do have certain volumes that are encrypted because I will have like financial data on them. But they're number like literally like 10 feet away from me. I have a briefcase that has just nothing but like a dozen and a half different like pocket and external drives, because I try to be careful about migrating photos and documents from one machine to another when I upgrade hard drives or upgrade computers. But the number of times where I need something from 2007, and if I were a lot more clever, I would have a folder on a server marked 2007 photos, but I'm not clever. But thank goodness I have a FireWire external drive that is unencrypted that I don't need to get the password for, that can just plug in and get back everything that I had in 2007. So it depends. You have to manage all of the problems that might be in your workflow. One of them might be dropping that drive and getting it stolen. Another might be forgetting that that prawn salad cocktail is supposed to be your password, but you keep getting the number ones and number zeros wrong, and so you keep thinking that you're going to have to lose all your data.
I'm just so happy it's not a portable platter with a super high failure rate anymore, which used to happen all the time.
Exactly. And it's bus-powered terabyte. I mean, you don't have to get the terabyte. You can get – there's 256 and 512, I think. Or what, actually, they – kind of nicely.
Get the terabyte. I had three fail in a month once. It was just unbelievable. And this is so much better.
Seagate.
Yeah.
Well, this is the Samsung EVO 850. This is an SSD that is widely considered to be the best on the market, or at least one of the top two on the market. And has been used happily in many of my systems for years, a couple of years. So it's a good, this is a good drive.
My failure point has been ever since I started using MacBooks that have internal SSDs, I'm used to just being able to pick it up and carry it off without having to look for a blinking light to stop. And the number of times I've almost lost like a half a terabyte of data because I forgot that I had a spinning hard drive full of like backed up photos connected. I was like, I'll actually lift it up. I'll be half off the sofa. Then like, if not for the fact that I plugged in a 3 foot long USB cable, I'd be very, very sad right now.
Yep.
But you don't have to care about it when the external is an SSD as well.
Yeah. Especially traveling in bags and going to shows and things. Those discs would just get battered around, and now it's so great.
I keep my Bitcoin wallet on here, my 1Password vault on here, my PGP keys on here. So it needs to be encrypted. But that having that in your pocket is great. Yep. And my Minecraft server.
that needs to be encrypted, definitely. Because no one wants to mess with your pyramid.
Hacking my pyramid, man. Don't be hacking my pyramid. I even have images for my Windows 10 install on this. It's so big. Nice.
when you have a terabyte, you can also put like virtual machines for just about everything.
Yes.
And so it's like I love this is why when I bought the iPad Pro, I didn't even consider getting anything less than the largest amount of storage I could have, because the real power of these devices is when you don't even have to ask yourself, should I have this data on here? When it's like, I can definitely have a Windows 10 and a Windows 7 virtual machine on this drive, because who knows, maybe I'll want to actually run either one of those. If I had like the 256 gig or the 512, I might be thinking, okay, well, that might leave less room for movies, or what if I get forget it. This is like a wish that gives you infinite wishes.
I probably should have brought this up in the picks section, but I'm just so thrilled that you recommended this. And looking at the Mac Observer column and everything, I know it's a stupid thing to do, but I'm just going to trust the Samsung K extensions and put them on all my machines and live with that.
Yeah, I was called. My attention was called to that. Again, I've got people listening. People are nice enough to like offer comments and stuff.
Yeah,
like
we appreciate that. By the way, that was great.
No, that's absolutely a minimum. Two brains on a problem will definitely make things better. I had to notice that the main column was written like January of last year, January February of last year. Also, I wish that the author had gone into a little bit more depth. Saying, well, here's what I noticed, so I tried this, and this is what happened. It really seemed like I was scared off by custom drivers, so I stopped.
Right.
And I'll follow. We'll follow up later on. And unfortunately, the article itself didn't have a link to the follow up. But that's the problems that he or she brought up are things that anybody would be thinking of. And I hoped that I had addressed them when I talked about it last week, yeah. but apparently yeah. not.
Well, no, you did. I think you absolutely did.
But sometimes you have to kind of underscore.
Well, and like also, I think it's one kind of thing you loop back. You go, oh, now I know what Andy was. Now I, oh.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what he's saying. Yeah. You can't mount this.
it's like when we were talking about sous vide and we had to say, yes, you're cooking chicken at 140 degrees, which is 25 degrees below the safe level. I'm telling you it'll be okay. Okay, yes, it's pink looking chicken, but I'm telling you it's safe to eat. You're okay if you get skeeved out by this, but I'm telling you it should be safe to eat.
Let's see. Let's take a break and come back with more. Andy Iannacco here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. And the lovely and talented Alex Lindsay from The Warehouse. He's you should really have some of these livestock judging gloves there in The Warehouse.
Protect. Yeah, we could get some cattle right out the other side.
Take the digits there. You don't want to get...
You don't want to leave behind any fingerprints, the things that you've been going on by there.
From it.
Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Man, they were a revelation for me when I found out about FreshBooks 10 years ago. Since then, 5 million people have adopted the FreshBooks way. Yes, the FreshBooks way. If you're a freelancer or a small business, you're sending out invoices, you got to keep track of all this stuff. Man, oh man, it's no fun. On the other hand, don't invoice, then you don't get paid. And as much as you love what you do, you don't want to do it for free. When I found out about FreshBooks, I started using it to send out my invoices. I got paid faster. It helped me do multiple currencies, which is it will do all the currencies automatically for you, translate them. If you're keeping track of hours, you can use the FreshBooks app to track the hours, get it right into the invoice. Same thing with receipts. Now, I always had to bill for expenses. That was another pain to go to the pick up all the receipts and figure them all out and put them in a spreadsheet. Now, FreshBooks just does it. It's awesome. You'll be creating and sending invoices in minutes. You'll get paid online right away with FreshBooks payments built into the invoice that your client just clicks a button. And takes their pick of online payment, all the big online payment procedures, which is nice because it's a pain for them too. They just want to pay you. You get paid faster with FreshBooks. You can even get paid up front now. They have this new feature. You can request a deposit in FreshBooks, and they kind of hold it for you. No more covering costs out of pocket or waiting to the end of the project to get paid. They just announced their card reader. This is great for people who work in the home, like a plumber or contractor, home inspector, installer. You set up home theater systems. You get the FreshBooks software on your phone. You can actually present the estimate to the customer right there, get their approval, do the work, present the invoice to them right there, and get paid right there with their card reader. It's EMV enabled, which means it does chips as well as stripes. So you can dip the chip, swipe the stripe, your client can, and pay you right away. It's, of course, email enabled, too. So you do the invoice and they send you the receipt. And it's so nice. This is the way to work. FreshBooks.com. I love it because FreshBooks really is out there to empower the freelancer, the small business to get the job done. I want you to try it free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And if they ask you, how did you hear about us? Make sure you put MacBreak Weekly in there so we get the credit. FreshBooks.com/MacBake. A 30-day trial awaits. Really loved it. Save my butt kiss.
Your bacon.
My bacon, yes. So let's see here. Let's move along to something else on the rundown. Thank you, Jason Cleanthes, for lining up all of our articles today. Apple is going to step into fashion. Actually, some would argue Apple's already stepped into fashion.
Oh, they stepped in it all right.
the Metropolitan Opera has a gala every year. It's in New York City. It's a big fashion event. This year, they're going to talk about technology at the gala. It's titled Manus Ex Machina, Fashion in an Age of Technology. And Apple is partnering with the Fashion Institute, the Costume Institute, to do this. So the festivities don't begin till May. But they already have previewed some of the outfits people will be wearing, the costumes. And Apple, I guess because of the Apple Watch, which has gotten them into the business.
They have a lot of fashion people on staff now at every level of the company.
Johnny Ive is the gala co-chair with Vogue's Anna Wintour and actress Idris Elba and Taylor Swift. That's kind of neat. I'd love to be at that meeting with Idris Elba, who's just the greatest. Love him. Often bruited about as the next James Bond. Taylor Swift, Anna Wintour, and Johnny Ive. Man, the Starbucks order must be something.
Power quadruple.
I'm going to have a half-calf, half-decaf soy latte with a twist. Make sure the beans are single-sourced from Ethiopia.
And could you put it in a cup without a logo? And I think the curl on that lip is a little bit too thick. I'd like to have chamfer that a little bit sharper.
Oh, you know what? Medium. You know what we do when we curl the lip, right, Renee?
Roll up the rim to win.
Roll up the wind to rim to win.
Tim Horton's joke to all the Americans watching.
No one knows what you're talking about, but it got us all talking like that for a while. Here's Issey Miyake's flying saucer dress, machine pleated.
Well, and I think that like if you look 80s. At, I, you know, I think that the watch
that actually
is the beginning.
Yeah, 90s, yeah.
Looks like Rainbow's
These are what
Rainbow
the new Apple Watch band's going to look like.
Yeah.
And I think that the watch is probably the beginning of wearables for Apple. It's probably not the only thing that they're thinking about, at least, whether it actually comes out or not. I think that, you know, wearable technology and connected technology, I think, is going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of. Glasses, watches, even, you know, stuff on our...
I'm excited about hearables. We had somebody on Saturday on the new Screensavers who used a laser to scan my ear insides and made on a 3D printer, made the mold for the earpiece. But this company that's doing this, and they did that all in kind of like within the hour of the show. The company that there's my ear. There's a model of my ear. But the company that's doing this is going to do a Kickstarter in the next month or so, where they'll do the same thing, but it will have a EEG monitor built in. And nice. I was talking to the founder, and he said, you know, you're so close to the a very thin membrane of the blood that it's easy to do things like blood oxygen, EEG. He says, we can do a glucose monitor that's non-invasive with this technology. We can do, of course, heart rate, blood pressure. I like this idea. I like the idea, because we all wear headphones all the time, of a headphone, an in-ear headphone that's also everything of Apple, you know, Fitbit or Apple Watch could do from the health point of view and more.
Well, and Jeff Williams is running an organization that does health. Not, like, so his mandate is not just Apple Watch. It's health products in general. And there's a decoupling of watch from health because you have to get a lot of government approval for that. So a watch goes to market super fast.
Yeah, as soon as you're measuring that stuff, you've got to get FDA approval if it's going to
for health. So there might be devices that they're working on that do require that stuff that now that they're decoupled from the watch, there's no pressure to get them done. They'll be done when they're ready and they'll get all the prerequisite information.
Now we understand why they bought Beats.
Well, I mean, there's that. There's wearables and there's projectables, and both of those are going to be huge because once you start taking screens, software can live anywhere. It doesn't have to live on the device that it's resident on. And once you have those two things, your watch has a very tiny screen, but you walk into certain contexts and maybe that watch can take over the big display in your car or something. And then you start having a really interesting future where you're not bound to any one device.
Yeah.
And as you pair, you know, and a lot of times we think of these as hearing aids, but they're really, you know, these hearing devices. You know, right now, most of us, when we have our, you know, some kind of headset that's blocking off that ear, what if that is actually something that doesn't block it off, it's something we leave in a lot, as you would with, you know, so earbuds, you have people with healthy hearing, you just have, you have healthy hearing, but you also have an earpiece in there, and it's getting everything from the outside world in the same way that your other ear is getting it. You have control over it with your watch. So you can decide where you want it to go. But when someone makes a phone call, it kind of keeps you being ever present to all the other things you might want to use headphones for, whether it's watching a movie or you're not like, oh, I'm going to put my earpiece in. I'm just, you know, it's just going to, you know, pair to whatever it needs to pair to or whatever I choose to pair it to get that alternative audio track for my life.
And the coder presses a button and all of a sudden it's noise canceling. You can go back to work.
Right. Yeah. And if you combine something like that with, you know, with some kind of augmented reality for your eyes, you know, at least over one eye or over both, it becomes something where you're kind of half in, you know, it starts to blend the real world and the virtual world pretty seamlessly.
Motorola had a really nice product last year called the Moto Hint. That was a super, super small Bluetooth earpiece, so small that you really had to look at the right angle to even notice that someone had it in. And even there, he didn't look like a guy with an earpiece in. And part of it was not just that it was a Bluetooth earpiece, but also that it had a capacitive pad on it so that you could, kind of like a, you know, Star Trek communicator, tap it and then talk to Siri or tap it and then talk to Google Now. And that is a real natural way for you to interface with the stuff, particularly Siri, when you think about it not just as a voice command system, but as a platform for running apps that have no touch or visual user interface. So much of what we can do can be done just simply by tapping that button, activating Siri and just saying, Siri, please do this thing for me, or Siri, please give me this one scrap of information. So you think about situations in which just holding, looking at your watch is even too much to ask for. All I want to know is what's the temperature right now as I'm getting dressed. And that's a good that's a good fit for so much of what's being done.
I, for one, am really looking forward to it. I think in-ear monitors, since we all listen to music a lot, will be the least obtrusive. Of course, there's, you know, laws against driving with them and so forth. Maybe just one ear. Or
I think they'd really have to get it perfect to make it completely audio transparent when you want it to be.
Right.
I can't remember. Did Christina Warren once write about these new headphones she had where it was exactly like that, where it's passing, it's blocking your ears, but it's passing through sound from the outside with filters if you enable them. And so that essentially that's completely transparent to whatever outside sound is, because problem number one is making an earpiece that's comfortable enough that you would want to wear it all day long. Problem two is making it safe so that you could wear it all day long without pushing earwax deeper and deeper into the ear canal. But then number three would be I would certainly not wear it unless I had a specific instance in which this was the perfect solution to the problem. That's the same situation which I have with my Google Glass over there. I do still wear it and I still use it, but only in those situations in which I would absolutely know that this is going to be a good Google Glass situation. And this sort of tech is only good if it's just like a wristwatch. It's something that you pick up and you put on every day, whether you think you're going to need its services or not.
Speaking of Beats... looks like there's another reason why Apple acquired Beats, for their extremely fabulous relationship with Dr. Dre. He's going to be filming, or is filming right now, Apple's first scripted television series. What? You've talked about this a lot, Alex. In fact, we talked about it on Twitter on Sunday, so I beg your pardon for asking you to repeat. But this is something we've thought Apple should do all along with all their cash, is do what Netflix did, do what Amazon's doing, is...
Absolutely. And it looks like they're staying very – it looks like they may keep this not focused on Apple TV or any of the other products, but really music, and having possibly an exclusive content just for music, which if they use this as an example and then use it as a sell piece between the stuff they did with Taylor Swift and in this case – it really starts to build up a, you know, if they're willing to throw money at building content for bands that is exclusive to Apple Music, that is going to be something that I think is going to be very compelling.
That's a good point. You know, this really is aimed at the music fans, at the Dre fans. In fact, it's going to be written and produced by the creator of Empire, which is a fictional show about a rap mogul. This is apparently going to be kind of based on Dr. Dre's life, six episodes. This is weird, but we'll have to see how it works. Each episode, not a comedy, by the way, this is a drama.
No.
Half hour based on an emotion and how a different emotion for each episode, how Dre's character deals with it. Sam Rockwell will be in it. Mo McRae will be in it. And this is kind of a surprise from Apple. It's going to be adult. No shortage, according to the Hollywood Reporter, which got the scoop of violence and sex. The reporter said an episode filming last Monday and Tuesday featured an extended orgy scene with naked extras simulating sex in a mansion. Dr. Dre was not there, but his wife Nicole Young apparently was.
Not a surprise from Dr. Dre, a surprise from Apple.
Yeah, I mean, this is the company that banned any kind of adult content on its app store. But
on its app store, but not on, but definitely not on the on Apple TV. But it is very odd that this they pick this as one of their first things. But it may
I feel like it's a signal. Yeah, it's a signal.
I think it's a positioning to the bands, like, you know, we're going to come to you and talk to you about stuff, and nothing's really off, you know, off limits.
Nothing
you know,
so bothers bands more than this notion of being censored, right?
Right, right.
And
so the idea, yeah.
I mean, Apple Apple pioneered the explicit tag, and actually, I give them a lot of credit for that. Because in most cases, you have a choice. This has always been the case in rap music. You get the radio version or the album version. But even for podcasts, you know, and we try very hard to not have the explicit tag because we want to make it family friendly.
Forgive me if this has been said before, but this seems very similar to a Netflix or HBO model where you want to have programming that is so good that people come and subscribe to your service. And they need Apple Music subscriptions. And if a Dre show or a Drake thing drives those subscriptions, then it's absolutely worth our while to produce that content. And Apple, there is a music video component to that. And a music video could quickly become a short form serial content. And then people want to watch Dre. They have to watch it on Apple Music. Suddenly Apple Music subscriptions go up.
Well, and it makes this sense is just the beginning of this. Go ahead.
Well, it makes sense as a music product because if you already have a relationship with the music product that Apple creates, and if you are bringing fans of a specific genre and fans of a specific creator, that makes a little bit more sense than the scenarios that we've been talking about for a while before. I still find it difficult to understand a pitch that Apple could make to a well-known established producer or well-known established actor to say, here is why you want the relatively narrow audience of Apple users, as opposed to Netflix and get everybody, or Hulu and get everybody, or YouTube and get everybody. Google was a very, very loud last night at the Grammys about talking about its original YouTube Red content, which are original series mostly based on people who are already very popular YouTube contributors. That's a natural extension for YouTube to get into, to start sponsoring their own content. Like I said, I don't think that's a silly idea for Apple to get into this. As I said, I just have difficulty imagining the pitch that Apple can make to someone who has not yet been turned down by Netflix and Hulu, that here is why you should take our money. It would have to be a big truckload of money, and it would have to be to the right creator that would be even valuable for Apple to get.
But what if they did it the other way? Like, what if they said, like, we want to drive subscriptions to Apple Music. We have Dre on staff. Let's see what we can do with Dre. We have a relationship with Drake. Let's see if we can get some people to make a Drake show. Like, I think instead of trying to find a creator and then seeing if they'll be willing to make something for Apple TV, I think they're going to very carefully spec out what they think are the biggest opportunities to convert Apple Music subscriptions and then design programming around the personalities they think that can do that.
And I think that they're going to also look at the specific audiences that have very, very intense followings, you know. So you know, there's some bands that can command a lot. You look at a band like Phish, which isn't really super well known, but has people that are paying for every one of those concerts to watch, you know, to watch their shows. You have obviously Taylor Swift. You could see a Katy Perry fitting into that model, and you could see a variety of other folks that, if you can add 20,000-30,000 subscribers, even for a month, to watch some exclusive content, then some percentage of them are going to forget to turn it off. They're going to decide that music is cool. You know, I mean, the biggest selling point for music, in my opinion, is just the fact that effortlessly you can ask your phone to play something. You know, and
it's really changing the world. You saw, if you watched the Grammys, you saw them pleading not to stream music. We only get a fraction of a cent. What was your guy's reaction to that?
Well, that was hysterically funny, because the way they led into that is that, and we need to take a stand against business practices that don't put money into the hands of creators. And I'm like, let's go to the history of music since the days of the wax cylinder. Your entire business is based on seeing what you can charge against the accounts of the creators, making sure you cheat them out of their royalties, cheat them out of their copyright. And now you're saying...
Yeah,
just because streaming is preventing you from buying your third boat as a music executive, now suddenly you're really concerned about creators. Nice one.
I really wonder what normal people thought when they saw that. I mean, is that going to make people stop using Apple Music and Spotify? And what does Apple do, by the way? Because Apple wants to be tight with the musicians with Apple Music, but they're doing streaming.
Yeah, but they're only charging for it. What I think a lot of those folks that, you know, when people start
so it's the free streaming tier they don't like?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
No, it's not, because they said, here's a penny. Here's what we get of that penny. That's the paid tier they're talking about.
Well, so the thing is that what everybody uses as an example is Pandora, which is the lowest paid.
Which, by the way, is looking for somebody to buy them because they are...
It's not working.
It's hard.
We're going to lose Pandora. We're going to lose SoundCloud. We're going to lose Tidal or something. I don't know what's happening over there.
Every company that doesn't have ancillary revenue streams to counteract the cost.
The only companies that will stay in this are Amazon, Google, Apple, and maybe Microsoft because they don't need to make money on it.
Or maybe like a Samsung eventually. Someone who's
I don't know. You know, Nokia got out of sold off their mix, and now Line killed it today. And I wonder. Samsung's killed its Milk Music store. I think that the
When we think about the number of times we've listened to an album, you know, there are certain albums definitely that I've listened to, and you think about someone getting paid per play. Before I made an agreement with the band for, you know, $9.99. I bought Zenyatta Mandata from the Police, and I then proceeded to listen to it 1,000 times, you know, and they weren't getting paid every single time I, you know, listened to, you know, Man in a Suitcase. They were learning. They were, you know, getting paid once. And so, you know, and part of the reason that the money, you know, we're kind of in this middle ground where, you know, the free tiers, I think, are probably not good for the artists. I think that.
Oh,
we lost Alex.
Somebody pulled the plug. Somebody in the warehouse.
The music industry got him. It's funny, though, because you hear this from other industries all the time. Like, teachers don't have enough money. The first responders don't have enough money. And now artists don't have enough money. It's almost like the world is – and I don't want to – I'm a creator. I want to get paid for all the content that I create. But at the other hand of this, you know, this is a problem every industry have. They had so much money for so long a period of time that the idea of normalizing is – paralyzing. Like, do you remember, Leo, at one point when it went to digital, they were like, well, if you want to listen in your car, you've got to license it again. If you want to listen on your home player, you got to license. And they thought that was justified. And the world is telling them, no, we like listening to your music, but this is the new value we're going to ascribe it. And we're sorry that it's not billions. But again, look at what teachers get paid.
I just learned this economic term called rent seeking. It means seeking to increase your share of existing wealth without creating new wealth. It's essentially what the record labels do with their catalog. We've already spent the money to make it. We've already gotten paid for it. Let's see how we can make more money off of it.
I've bought Star Wars in so many formats.
Exactly. It's rent seeking. And once you start seeing this, you see it in all over the place. And it's really not good for society. Because economic efficiency is reduced by it. It's really interesting. Anyway, there we got Alex back. What happened? Did you have a power outage there? Oh, now he has no audio.
Poor Alex. I wonder if lifetime customer value has really changed that much, though. Because like some people just wouldn't buy things. They'd buy it once, like Alex said, and just listen to it over and over again. And that ends up being pennies for us play.
But nonetheless, there are different dynamics to this. If I the VHS that I bought of the original Star Wars, it still works. I can still put it in a VHS player and still play it in beautiful two channel hi-fi at VHS resolution. It's not dumb or scummy for them to say now that there is a DVD format that's more convenient, we're going to sell this in DVD format. And then when there's a high definition format, now we're going to sell it on Blu-ray. And because now there are people who would much rather simply not have to deal with physical media at all, we will sell it to people who want to buy it as a digital title and have it streaming. The trouble is when a company is not taking notice of how people have changed their relationship to the product. Those early days of digital music, I mean, when Sony had their digital locker system, where the first thing it did when you needed its special to use the special new Sony digital music player, you needed to install the Sony special digital music library app. And when you install library app, the first thing it would do is say, oh, I see that you have 600 MP3s. We're going to transmogrify it without asking you to our special locked up format. And if you want to use it on the player, we're going to have to make you lock it out of the desktop version. And that was nothing more than their attempt to say, well, we can finally remake this industry so we have more control. And they'll have no alternative but to buy several different copies for each different format, for each different place they want to listen to it in. And the people said, wow, if only, it's just too bad there's nothing, there's no source for us to download music illegally. Hey, wait a minute, there is. So we don't have to deal with your bull. Great. Goodbye. And so this is the sort of stuff that happens when they simply try to ask people pretty please. We know that every scrap of data that we're being given says that you don't want to buy music anymore. You want to buy access to a library, but pretty please don't do that. Or at least the other half of the argument that they were making that made sense was that they were trying to make deals so that to make sure that they're not just simply letting you have the White Album. They're not letting Apple Music or a service have the White Album for nothing. That there must be a way that if something is responsible for, you know, half of the plays of a given month, there has to be a proportional amount of money that they're getting for it. That's not that offsets the amount of money they're not getting for actually doing physical album sales. It has to be worth their while.
It's funny, John August was saying that it's best for a screenwriter if you rent and not buy, because their deal, they make more money on a rental than they do if you actually buy the thing.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, that's just double crazy. Every time there's a brand new negotiation between the different creative unions and you find out all the different things the industry is demanding that writers and performers give back to them. The last big writer strike was all about how we don't want to pay you for any digital retransmission of anything that you do, because we're going to determine that that's just, it's all promotional. And meanwhile, these networks are investing hundreds of millions of dollars in new streaming services because they don't make any money off of that. It's all just promotional. It's just terrible.
Well, and I think the pay-per-view, am I coming through okay now?
Yeah, you sound great.
Yeah. The pay-per-view is going to eventually make a lot of sense. It may not make sense right now, but it is going to eventually pay off, I think, when you have 100 million people all in one service or 100 million people in two services. In the current way of we're going to cut it up every different way we can possibly do it, it's not working, but it's still a brand new market. And I think that, you know, they figured out how to make money with advertising. They just haven't figured out the other parts yet. But I think Apple coming into it and getting, I mean, Apple's going to have 20 million users by the end of the year, you know, and I think that, you know, and probably 50 million by the end of the next year. I mean, it's
it looks trajectory. Like, I have to say, Apple Music is a success, isn't it?
It is.
And they have 11 million and paid it, subscribers now. Is that the number now?
It depends on how you subscribe success.
That's true.
I mean, like, that's true. They're not the biggest service yet, but they're much bigger than they were.
Yeah. It's definitely not a failure.
Yeah, it's not a failure.
They will. Just the convenience of it will get them to 20 million. I mean, regardless of whether the features work. I mean, I'll tell you, there's a couple things about it. The search, you know, you're listening to a song and you want to see other bands like this band, Spotify is still way better.
Well, that's my argument. Okay, maybe you're only getting a penny, but you didn't get much for radio airplay either. And,
exactly.
This is how people find you. And I think the record industry has decided that streaming isn't as good as radio airplay. Well, you better start to sit up and take notice, because you're not going to get much more.
Problem. There's a huge background problem too, because if you remember, they were going to sue Best Buy and Apple for the use of their cover art on the store shelves, which is crazy when you think about it. But they got so little money from the labels, and there was no way they could get more money from the labels. They were desperate to get it from anybody, and you still see that today. They were so maltreated by the middle people in that business relationship for so long. They're desperate to get any sort of revenue they can, and Apple and the other streaming providers are a new source of, you know, opportunity for that. So if they're saying buy it, that money is not really going to go to them anyway, but it sort of vents the frustration they've had with their legacy system.
Well, and I think that the other thing is we have to remember that these artists are getting a fraction of what the labels are getting. So the label is getting paid X amount of pennies per play, you know, and then the artist is getting a hundredth of that or at least a fifth or a sixth or whatever, very, very small numbers of that. When you have a service like Apple that could actually fund development, when you have people who are actually producers that work at the company, when Apple gets to 20, 30, 40 million, how quickly are they going to start saying, we can do your album? You know, we can, you know, we can go to a Taylor Swift, or maybe not Taylor Swift immediately, but to an artist that is well known and say, we'll produce the album.
Video.
Yeah, exactly. But what happens when we give you the package where we'll record your album, we'll pay for that. We will do your, you know, video. We will do a special movie about you. You know, these are all things that could be, you know, that Apple is uniquely positioned to pay for. And it'll be a long time before Apple's in a monopoly position, you know, in this area. So, you know, Spotify is succeeding and, you know, a lot of the other services is, you know, allows Apple to kind of experiment in that area in a way that they probably can't if they were, you know, 90% of the market.
I keep wondering if maybe the music industry, maybe even later the TV and the movie industry, are going to go in the direction that, say, web comics went into, where for the entire history of comic strips, it would be you have to get signed by a major syndicate because they control access to the readers through selling your strip to newspapers. And then newspapers started going down the toilet. But people still liked the product of a comic strip. So you have creators like Scott Kurtz with PvP Online and the folks who do Penny Arcade, who had the ability to, given that they have the ability to put the product directly in front of the reader's eyes through the web, they don't need to. They don't need to sign up with some sort of a middleman that wanted to start creating a syndicate of webcomics. They could just simply create a one-to-one relationship with their reader. They typically team up with somebody who's not an artist but is an MBA who really knows how to run a business like that. So I'm wondering how long it's going to be before the people who are growing up right now or are getting into the business right now are thinking that the very last thing that I would ever want to do was sign with a label, because why would I want them to take that much out of my pocket every single time I make a sale, assuming that they actually let me have any of my money, when I can actually start. I'm right now in a position where I can feed myself and clothe myself and house myself for $18,000 a year because I'm 19 years old and full of vinegar. It's okay for me to think that a big success is making $45,000, $65,000 a year. That's, and so on that basis, what can you offer that person that would guarantee them Taylor Swift sort of audiences with Charles Foster Kane scale problems?
Right. And when the numbers are much larger, when you have once you have a service that's 30, 40, 50 million users, all paid, all money coming back to the and as people start to go past the labels where they're only getting a fraction and going directly to the, I mean, wouldn't it be great if you actually had a piece of software that people can actually create their albums on and publish directly to your publishing service? And of course, Apple is uniquely set up to do that, you know, so that, you know, they really can cut everybody out of the middle. You know, one of the things I think we had in the studio a long time ago, we had Peter Himmelman, come and play a little bit and talk about it, I think after one of the twits a while ago, and then he came over and played at my house. And when Sony gave him a lot of money to do an album, he didn't go to a studio. He bought all of his gear in the early 90s and recorded it in his little own home studio instead of doing all that stuff. And that was just when that technology was coming out. Now the technology is everywhere, you know, and it for a fraction of the cost, you can produce a great album. You know, the big thing that the studios provide is the right producers and, you know, the backing bands and the extra pieces and, you know, all those things. So if you're self-sufficient, there's a lot you can do. And I think those opportunities are going to continually get better.
So I have to correct myself because pointers in the chat room said that they were talking about this ad-supported streaming when they said we aren't getting any money. And in fact, I look at the quote and it was in fact saying, if you subscribe to a music service, thank you. So that was, they don't hate paid subscription services, and they shouldn't, because that's as much as they're going to get from anybody. $10 a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I bought a CD a month, you know, I would think they'd be happy if everybody in America bought a CD a month.
And when everyone moves to everybody's on a subscription service that they're actually paying for, the money could actually be at least equal to what they're getting.
So they're not against Apple, Apple's streaming. They're for it as long as you pay.
Except
for
Kanye.
It.
Kanye is against Apple Music.
Poor Apple. Poor Kanye. What the hell's going on with Kanye?
He's broke.
I think he's having I think he's having.
Well, Taylor Swift has brutalized him. So I mean, like,
I feel like he's not making a lot of sense at this point. Especially saying, Mark Zuckerberg, you have to call me tomorrow and give me $1 billion. I feel like Kanye may have lost touch with reality. I think it may be a serious situation. Not, I mean, he's always been a little strange, but I feel like he might have. This might have been a psychotic break. This is not nothing to laugh at. It's something serious. No, I think
It's been coming for a long time.
Yeah, he says, Mark Zuckerberg, I'm the greatest artist of all time, and you need to give me $1 billion so I can continue to make my art. And I think only a mentally disturbed person would say that. I don't think that's normal.
He's got us all talking about it, but...
Yeah, maybe it's conscious on his part or something, but I actually think that that's cause for concern about Kanye, not mockery of Kanye. This is something not good.
Apologize.
Well, I don't know. He's easy to mock.
He said, I'm going all in on Tidal, and you'll never see me on Apple Music. And that seemed like an awfully
But then
final
he changed
statement.
Things. Like he said, okay, you're going to, I mean, he, yeah, no, I, he clearly doesn't like Apple, but he bought Tidal. And he's apparently, he says $53 million in the hole from doing so. But as somebody pointed out, he's also buying the house next door for $2 million because he doesn't want neighbors. So I don't know what's going on. It's just.
I hope you feel better, Kanye.
It's the kind of car wreck that Twitter really is well suited for, and it's not the first Kanye car wreck on Twitter either.
There are times where I see news like this, and I have to remind myself that I have not only do I have I never met this person, not only do I have no idea who he is or what he's about, but also I have no idea about that world that he lives in of hyper celebrity and being a musician. Yeah. It's like I'm not in a position to say good, bad, or indifferent.
It would make you crazy if you weren't already.
Yes.
I know it's made me crazy. Apple's share of notebook market. Boy, you know, we all remember the days it was 2-3% of the, and it was like, oh yeah, we're just we're a downtrodden minority. 10% of the notebook market, they're going up while everybody else is going down. MacBook sales continue to gain.
And it's also interesting because Apple's only making premium products still. So their share of the profit from that industry is again
even higher. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that again.
Unit shares? Yeah, it's market share.
Yeah. And that translates into immense profit share.
Immense profit share, yeah.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that notebooks are giving way to tablets, whether it's Apple's tablets or Microsoft tablets.
Yeah,
and
these numbers, which is weird, do not count things like the Surface, the convertible tablets.
It's a bit of a racket. The way they count this stuff has always been a bit of a racket. Yeah. Like they had iPads classified as media tablets for a while.
Right.
And they're in a separate division, and that's just because of who's paying the analyst bills, I think, at any given month.
Maybe. HP, still number one, as they have been for the last 3 years, with a roughly 20% market share. It's actually, they've gone up. Lenovo also has gone up. They have 20% market share. Dell, they've gone up, 14% market share. Asus, 10, Apple, 10. Then Acer, Samsung, and Toshiba. Toshiba's getting out of the business, I think, with 1.6% of the market. And 11% to others. So good for Apple. And yeah, good for Mac. And I really want Apple to make money on Macintosh because I want them to continue to support it. Because I still love my Mac. It's my thing.
Yeah, a lot of the worries that we have when we point out that, oh, look how much money that Apple is making off of iPhones. What happens if those sales actually stop? Or what about if they're not going to put a lot of effort into software and services because they make all their money off of iPhones? But the fact of the matter is that they keep the fact that they keep making a line of products that takes an immense amount of engineering resources to keep innovating and keep improving. And the fact that they've been doing so much to not just say, hey, guess what? We come up with a new color metal to put in the 2016 MacBook, but coming up with something as different as the 2015 MacBook, that's an indication of how much faith they have in the Macintosh and how long-lived that operating system is going to be.
We're going to take a break. iOS 9 coming soon to a phone near you. We'll talk about that. There are several Mac security warnings we will have for you in a few minutes. And I think we've talked about Error 53, but there's more to say, I guess. There's
more and less.
More and less, yeah.
Yeah.
Less from Apple, more from everybody else. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com audiobooks. Gosh darn it, I love audiobooks. You know, thanks to when I was watching the Grammys and watching the wonderful scene from Hamilton, the opening number from Hamilton, of course, won a Grammy for a musical soundtrack. And because it's Hamilton, I don't think they normally broadcast that award. But because it was Hamilton, they thought, let's put that on TV. That's good stuff. And as Colbert said, now it's going to be really impossible to get a ticket to see Hamilton. But I'm ready because I've been reading an incredible biography of Alexander Hamilton that I'm told kind of inspired the play. It certainly helps you understand the play by Ron Chernow, who writes wonderful wonderful biographies. In fact, I'm going to get his book on Washington, A Life, 41 Hours, and just great reviews. Butter Legume on Audible.com. Great handle. Says, I was sad the day the book was done. And a great narrator, Scott Brick. And that's one of the things that makes Audible so remarkable is they don't just kind of mechanically read a book. This is not a robot reading a book. This is a performer bringing a book to life. I listened to Team of Rivals. When the Lincoln movie came out, I said, I want to read Doris Kearns Goodwin's famous book that was the inspiration for Spielberg's Lincoln. And man, that was good. 41 hours of Lincoln. There's so much good stuff at audible.com. The John Adams biography. Now, I read it abridged first because I wanted to hear David McCullough read it. I love his voice. And then I got the unabridged version so I could hear the whole thing. Audiobooks from Audible. There's, of course, biography and history, but there's also science fiction. There's nonfiction. It's a great way to spend time in the car during your commute or at the gym on the treadmill or walking the dog or doing the dishes. I actually now, Audible has sold a bunch of Amazon Echoes for me because I can listen to Audible and my Echoes. So I have now. I've purchased my fourth Amazon Echo because I want Audible everywhere. Audible.com. We're going to get you a free book. And one of the reasons we mention so many books when we talk about Audible is to help you choose that first one. What do you got for us? Andy is another Audible lover, I know.
I had the exact same pick as you. I actually that wonderful biography of Hamilton because I'm one of those boring people who has never seen the musical but can never stop talking about it because I've got it on my I'm playing it all the time and I actually bought the other cool thing about Audible books is that I've been reading the Kindle and they have a syncing between Isn't the unabridged version and the book version so I can come back home after like reading it for about 45 minutes, an hour on the train. And then Macko can pick up exactly where I left off as I go into the kitchen and start making dinner. And it's like, I can't define what 2016 was supposed to be like back when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, but it was something like that where, where that things like that can happen. So I'm pretty happy with it. And by the way, I too am about to buy my second, my second Amazon Echo because
isn't it great? You just say you literally say Echo read to me and it picks up where you left off. And if you want a different book you can tell it. And the nice thing if you have multiple accounts, Lisa and I have multiple accounts, you can switch to another account and then say read to me. So it is amazing.
And that's all I have to say. You just say, you know, Alexei, read my book. And you have to remember. You don't have to remember the other systems. You have to remember the title. You have to remember the author and say it in the right order. It's like it knows that by my book. I bet he means the book that he was reading just now. Okay.
It even picks up where you left off. And actually, I love this. It goes back a few seconds, like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So you can get. Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, and now you're back in the flow of it.
Oh. You can just say skip ahead or skip back.
And,
yeah.
I'm kind of in love with Audible.
I love when I'm driving. And my navigation kicks in, Audible stops.
Yeah, that's dependent on your platform.
Yeah,
and but then, it's nice when it stops or and then you picks up again. Yeah, that's now you're using Android and the Audible app on Android is great, but it's also on iOS, of course, and you can listen on a desktop in the browser. Now that's a new feature on Windows on every platform. Audible.com/MacBreak. You're going to go there right now. You're going to pick a book. Could be that Alexander Hamilton biography. It's really good. It's very engaging. And you feel like, oh, I'm learning history. Oh, I kind of remember this. Oh, yeah, that. Oh, Aaron Burr and Hamilton were best friends for years. Go to Audible. Yeah, audible.com/MacBreak. And you'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's the book a month subscription. Most affordable way to do this is with a subscription. But you'll pay nothing for the first month. You get to pick a book. You'll even get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. And then, at the in the 30 days, you can cancel, keep the book. Or, if you decide to keep going, another book and another book and another book. And pretty soon, like me, I've been an Audible member for 16 years now. You'll have hundreds of books on your Audible bookshelf. Audible.com/MacBreak. I think you're going to love it. You're absolutely going
to love great.
It. So great. Oh, you listen too?
When I started listening to MacBreak, I heard an Audible ad. I used the code. I got it onto Audible and haven't stopped since.
It works. I think it's probably hurting our downloads, but because people don't have time for podcasts anymore, but I'm okay with that. Look at this. William Shatner, this is new, I didn't see this, has written a book about Leonard Nimoy, my 50-year friendship with a remarkable man.
Spock.
They first crossed paths on the set of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Young actors getting started in television.
He is now and always will be his friend.
Oh, you're going to make me cry. Knock it off. Shatner narrates that one, too, so it's got to be in it. Moment. Let's just play a little bit.
Montrealer, William Shatner.
That's right. Good Canadian boy.
Often, it's simply a matter of being in the right place at the right time, having some often undefined quality or desirable look. In many situations, it's as much marketability as it is acting ability.
Oh, man, I got to listen to that just so I can get the voice. Just so I get the voice. All right.
He's coming to Boston. He's going to be the headliner at the Boston Comic Con in August.
That's now. Isn't Wozniak doing Silicon Valley Comic Con?
Yeah, he's doing some sort of Comic Con.
Yeah, he's like funding it. Steve Wozniak, the founder of Apple. you might have heard his name.
You might have heard of them.
He's March 18th to the 20th. He's a comic fan. Remember, he did the US Festival. Jobs said, Steve, don't waste. And of course, Wozniak lost his shirt on it. Didn't matter because Woz isn't about money. Woz is about stuff that he loves. And he loves comic books. And here he's doing Comic-Con. My sense is he's putting the money up for it.
Well, you got Stan Lee and Shatner for inaugural Comic-Con. That's top shelf.
So nobody owns Comic-Con? It's not like some company's brand?
Yeah, I think San Diego actually owns it. They were fighting between themselves and Chicago Comic-Con for it. And I think it actually comes down to, do you put a hyphen in it or do you not?
Steve Wozniak and friends present Silicon Valley Comic-Con 2016. And there's a picture of Woz, and oh, I love this, and of his, let's go back, of his Nixie, he's got a Nixie tube clock on the front page with a countdown. Michael J. Fox and Leia Thompson are also going to be there. Back to the Future.
I'd like to have him on stage talking to Stan Lee, because I feel as though they're two people cut from the same cloth, where they have lots of stories, they enjoy telling those stories, and they know the role that they play with their fans, and they're only too happy to play that role.
Here's what Woz writes.
That's what I get.
Here's what Woz writes. He says, when I was growing up, it was hard to be a geek. It definitely wasn't cool back then, but I'm happy that things have changed because now being a geek or being different is cool, and Silicon Valley Comic Con celebrates being a geek. Love it. Thank you, Woz, once again. We have to say thank you, Woz. I guess we should go down there, Jason. I've never been to a Comic-Con in my life.
What are the dates on it again?
It's in March, 30 days from now, 18th through 20th at the San Jose Convention Center. Silicon Valley. That will be a fun one to go to because of the people. By the way, I think they're already sold out. I mean, tickets sold very quickly.
That's what happens. Even I tweeted out the news about Boston Comic-Con because it started off as something that could be held in the hallways of a downtown hotel just not too long ago. almost the biggest convention space Boston has, and it sells out. You can't buy a 3-day pass. You can't buy a Saturday pass. You gotta jump quick. It used to be San Diego was the only one where you had to make plans 8 months in advance.
Amazing. Let's see. All right. Should we talk about Error 53? We talked about it last week. This is the error that The Guardian first reported, where if you get a iPhone repaired by a third party, not by Apple, and they replace the screen, even if they don't replace the fingerprint reader, the screen and the fingerprint reader are tightly combined. Apple says they are the secure enclave is now not trustable. And whether it's intentional or not, when you then update your phone, you will get Error 53 and it will be bricked. Do we know, Renee, if you can bring your phone back to an Apple store at that point and get it fixed?
If you're under Apple Care, absolutely. If you're not under Apple Care, it might depend on how you talk to the geniuses and other people there, or whether Apple internally escalates it or not. It's one of those things that, again, like if you go to Apple to get the repair done, they will get this error sometimes too. But if it happens in the back of an Apple shop, they will just swap out your phone. So it's bad, but it's recoverable.
This is just a bug? That this wasn't.
It's both. It's two things. Like one, like an error 53 is not a user facing error, so it's probably not something anyone at Apple ever intended anyone in the real world to see. The security protocols are absolutely real, but the way that they were surfaced and the way that they reacted following the update was probably not predicted.
Yeah. And what do you think the upshot is? There's now a class action lawsuit.
There's a class action lawsuit.
That's meaningless.
What Apple does.
Yeah, that's meaningless.
It was a really good post by a Microsoft engineer. I forget her name, but I'll find it and tweet it. And she went through step by step about why this kind of problem exists, like from an engineering standpoint, that anytime you create, like, well, you should just turn off Touch ID. Well, then I could attack it this way. Well, right. You should just do this. Well, then, like, you could just swap it in for a non-Touch ID button. Well, then I could attack it this way. And she sort of went through why, from an engineering standpoint, this makes sense. But that, from a human point of view, it's horrible, and there's got to be a better way of surfacing, explaining, and handling this when it does happen.
Yeah. Now, there's some other bugs not created by Apple.
Software is hard, Leo.
Yeah. I think that's the takeaway. It's everywhere. I mean, Microsoft can't fix the Surface Book because they say software's hard. And now Adobe they updated the Creative Cloud. By the way, I think this is no longer, they stopped the update. So if you didn't get bit by this, you won't be. But they updated their Creative Cloud thing that runs in the menu that updates all the other stuff, Photoshop and Lightroom and Premiere and everything. And the update did a weird thing. It deleted the alphabetically first file in your root directory without warning, without notice. And the way we found out is that Backblaze, which is, as you probably know, a well-known backup company, keeps a file in the root directory, .bzvol, which has information about the backups, the state of the backups. And people were calling Backblaze saying, my Backblaze stopped working. And I don't know how they figured it out, but somehow they figured it out that the Adobe Creative Cloud update was deleting .bzvol, because on most people, that's the highest alphabetically file.
I remember about 10 years ago listening to you and Steve on Security Now when Adobe was doing some form of copy protection, and they were writing over the sectors that I think TrueCrypt or something else used and messing up everyone's encryption. Jeez, so this is not a first from them, but
they're horrible.
Yeah.
And yet, I just told my son, get the subscription to Lightroom and Photoshop. It's a great deal at $10 a month, and the photography subscription. So apparently they fixed this last night. Of course, if they deleted a file on your directory, it's too late. If you didn't have Backblaze, it would have deleted an Apple file, VT or V100 or something, which was a versioning index. And I don't know what the consequence would have been.
And my question is whether that on restart would get repopulated, because it was missing.
My sense from reading Ars Technica's report is that it would cause problems.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What I did and what we told everybody to do on Saturday was open terminal, cd/, let's go to the root directory, type sudo touch dot
a.
Although I loved Backblaze's suggestion was .Adobe, don't touch my BZ vol. Anything with dot A and enough A's is going to alphabetically sort and first.
I wondered whether it was something where for a while the first file was always dot Adobe something or other, so that
it must have been an Adobe file.
Someone writing something, you know, the way I.
But that's a stupid thing to assume, right?
You know, what it sounds like, and I have no idea what it actually is, but what it sounds like is, as a programmer, you were like working on something, and you just knew that the first file that you're working on is your file, and you just kind of did it as you were testing, and it just worked, and then you forgot about it, and then.
The version was 3.5.0.206. Adobe released an update to 3.5.1.209. The weird thing is, in order to put a file there, I had to use sudo. I had to authenticate. I guess you can delete a user file there if you created it. I don't know.
Well, I think you authenticate as part of the install process for Adobe.
Oh, you give it permission.
You escalate, yeah.
I wish that shouldn't. That's not. Please don't. And speaking of files having applications having too many permissions, Sparkle.
Well, this wasn't permitted. So this was they created this framework, and some people deployed it without using HTTPS. So they were sending things over an insecure channel, which opened them up to a person in the middle attack.
It's misimplementation of it. Sparkle is an open source framework for updating applications, and you could use HTTP or HTTPS for that channel. But if you use an unsecured channel, well, somebody could just say, hey, you could be in a coffee shop. Oh, let's grab that and put something else in there, inject some code onto that person's machine. It's hard to fix. Example,
I forget the guy. I'm going to mispronounce Andy's last name, and I apologize. Andy Michkin, but something like that. He did Sparkle, and then he went and worked at Apple at UIKit, and now he's at Khan Academy doing a lot of really, really cool stuff. Super, super bright guy, makes this great stuff, but then it's up to the developer to secure this stuff once they're implementing it. And in this case, it didn't happen, so people figured out how to get into it.
So there is an updated Sparkle updater, but the problem is it's hard for Sparkle to update itself. I guess. I don't know.
Well, no, theoretically, you can't trust. So, again, all of this is theoretical. I don't believe any of this has ever been found in the wild, and there's no evidence that anyone's actually had an attack performed using this. But the problem is you can't trust an update then. If the update process is susceptible to attack, you never know if you're getting a real update or someone has created a fake update to send to you to get even greater. And it does provide code-level access, so it's one of those things where you have to disable automatic updates, go to Sparkle's website, and install the new version. Or whatever, not Sparkle's website, sorry, the developer's new website, and install the new version of the app.
So many programs use Sparkle, and so many, unfortunately, use HTTP for this. So VLC is the one that most people will have. I had a bunch of apps from Mac Fun. I'm not clear, you know, you can quickly do, somebody put in the comments on the Ars article a find command, terminal command with grep, that would show you everything that uses Sparkle and what version, but what doesn't show you is whether it uses a secure HTTP connection. So you don't know if you're vulnerable, but a surprising number of applications do it wrong. And a lot of them use Sparkle. Why wouldn't you?
So there's two things. One is Mac App Store is not affected by this, obviously, because they have their own software update mechanism. So if you're using Mac App Store apps, it's not a problem. And also things like Apple's new App Transport Security, which is forward-looking and sort of insists on TLS-level protection, will hopefully make this kind of thing less likely going forward.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Anyway.
And also, don't set your iPhone to January 1st, 1970.
Oh, that. Yeah, I tried. You know, I started it, but it takes so long.
Georgia did it, but she didn't reboot, thankfully. And she did it live, and it was just very stressful for everybody.
How long did it take her? Because you can't just like set it.
7 minutes or 8 minutes.
You've got to scroll back to January 1st, 1970, which is the beginning of the Unix epoch. Unix was invented late 1969. And so in all Unix-based machines, including the Macintosh, and I presume Android as well, date and time are calculated as the number of seconds since the beginning of the epoch, January 1st, 1970. If you set your iPhone or your iOS device back to January 1st, 1970, what happens? Does it crash?
I kind of know what happens, but I think it's never safe to tell people what happens in these kind of situations because
it bricks it.
Like, So it creates a math error that on reboot does not let the machine properly function anymore.
Now, there's an easy fix. It just takes time. You let the battery die.
Yeah.
And apparently that, if you just leave it on in its unusable but booting state, eventually it'll go, and then apparently it works. So I don't know why. I guess it resets
and
the time.
Some people said it's slow, but then if you go back and reset the time, it works again. So yeah, you got to work your way out of that hole. Why people would do this, like, I don't know. But my concern immediately was, like, when we covered it on iMore, it wasn't that, oh, my God, you can't do this. It's don't let anyone trick you. And, like, don't make a bar bet over how long it'll take you to set your time to that date. Because people be pranksters.
But 7 or 8 minutes.
I would never
minutes,
think of doing anything like that.
Yeah. If it were easy, it would be problematic. But
yeah.
So math is hard. Software is hard.
Yes.
Enough said.
And Intel showing the chipsets are hard. I mean, we're not having a good week.
No. iOS 9 should be here spring. This is we're in winter still, but spring starts March 21st.
9.3,
I mean.
Yep.
Obviously, we have iOS 9. And that coincides kind of nicely with a March 15th Apple event and availability of a new iPad Air and maybe a new iPhone 5 SE. Do you think we will get 9.3 at the same time as we get those new devices?
Yep.
Might even be before spring then. Because one of the rumors is that the new phone will be available like the next day.
It's one of those things where, like, I liken the new phone to the iPod Touch update that was last year. It's like, you know, a lot of people use the iPod Touch anymore, but the people who do use it really love it. It was falling out of date, so Apple said if we put the modern chipset at the time in it, those people will just have a much better experience, and we can keep this product on the market for longer. So the iPhone 5 SE is saying, like, the iPhone 5S is still for sale. It's the lowest end thing, but there's certain features we can't do, like Apple Pay on it. But if we upgrade it to all the latest chipset, the latest eyesight, all these things, we'll have a phenomenally good phone that's at 4 inches that covers that segment of the market, is also at our bottom tier where people who, you know, can't afford or don't want to pay that much for a phone have something that's really great now. So we can give everyone a better experience by making this variant of that device. And it's an interesting strategy that Apple seems to be doing more now.
Well, and it's with the iPad, it was, you know, they had pretty much from $50 to $500. They had increments that you could decide when you wanted to get on the path. So I think that it's a model that they know well.
Yeah. Plus, it illustrates the fix that they're in, that they do have to make every phone that everybody every phone that it makes sense for them to make, given that they're the only makers of iPhones. They don't have to make, if someone wants a 7.2 inch iPhone, they don't have to make it. But if it's clear to them they're leaving money on the table because they're people who just can't afford an iPhone 6, or they're leaving money off the table because they're people who will buy any phone that is more pocketable because they don't necessarily need to have a tablet-sized phone, it falls to them to make it or just not get that money from those people. So,
and that's how you grow. I mean, when you're selling a few devices, you can have one. When you're selling a lot of them, the only way to increase that is to start adding addressable markets. So you made the bigger phone, everyone bought that. Some people want the smaller one. Maybe it's only 10%, but 10% of 100 million people that in a year, that's a lot of people and a lot of phones you can sell, and that's how you grow another 10% that year.
And it also takes a lot of the oxygen out of the system. So when you know, right now there's a lot of room for people to work, you know, whether it's Samsung or LG, you know, in an area that is well below what the iPhone is selling at. If they provide a lower cost one, there's a high probability they could take a bunch of that market away.
Well, let's talk about iOS 10. So, first of all, do you think that that's a credible rumor that the new devices, which will be announced on March 15th, rumor, will be available March 18th, rumor?
Sure. Anything that's not a flagship, like their biggest problem is handling a launch of a flagship iPhone, right? Because just the sheer amount and popularity, right, of that. But anytime they've had to update like an iPod, sometimes manufacturing gets in the way, but when they've been able to update like iPods or things like that, they've always been very, very quick.
If they do an iPad Air 4 that works with a pencil.
So great.
That would be, I bet you that would sell like hotcakes.
My only question with that is, let's say the smart connector and the smart keyboard. Apple's never made a tiny keyboard. I think the iPad Air, sorry, the iPhone Air, sorry, I think that's all wrong, Mac Air, MacBook Air, 11 inches. It's like the smallest, or the MacBook 12 inch is like the smallest keyboard they've ever made. And the iPad Pro keyboard's about the same size. We've never seen a teeny tiny keyboard.
Yeah, what would they do?
From Apple. So would they do one, or would they just let Logitech and other companies make theirs?
It's kind of what they did with the iPad Pro. They made a keyboard, but Logitech was their day and date with their creative keyboard.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine. It really is going to tell us a lot about what they think the iPad is for. The 9.7 is sort of the misfit of the lineup right now because I think the success of the iPad Mini has shown that most people want iPad apps, but they don't want something as big as an iPad Air. The relative success of the iPad Pro has shown that there are a lot of people for whom they were using the iPad Air because it was the biggest iPad available. But if you give them something, they're so into productivity that they really do want something a little bit larger. So if they were to start to position the iPad Air as sort of the more toteable and more affordable version of the Pro for people who want everything except for screen real estate, that'd be interesting. But I'm hoping that they won't put pencil support on the lesser size ones, because I'm not sure that people will have as good an experience with it on a smaller device as they might on a larger one.
I would love it. I would love to have a big workbook and then the notebook, and then eventually on the mini it would be like my field notes, and I would just carry those things.
Just more Apple stuff to get. So iOS 10 would be this fall with a new iPhone 7?
Yeah, they'd show it off at WWDC and then it would launch with the iPhone 7.
Yep. Right. Apple Insider article, Apple Maps vans operating round the clock in run-up to iOS 10 debut. Lots of people are seeing these vehicles drive around. And Apple has acknowledged that they are doing this. It even says Apple Maps on the side of the van.
This is what I don't understand. They've been driving around for years, and Maps is decoupled from, like, unless there's an interface level change or a new feature they want to roll out.
Why are they associating this with 10?
They're essentially decoupled.
Yeah. It's got LiDAR, GPS.
It's updated all the time.
Yeah.
So if they're going to do Street View, for example, and Street View is going to be a front-facing feature in iOS 10, then that would make sense. But otherwise, they're just going to keep updating stuff with better stuff every day.
This is also mapping that would be useful for autonomous vehicles.
That's too far ahead. The very simple fact is that it's no good to simply map the world and then say, good, we've done that. You have to keep these things refreshed. For a pointer of that, it's fun to sometimes take a drive around Google Maps and look at the signs in front of gas stations to see how quickly the numbers change on that thing. And sometimes I'll see like a gas station that's $4 a gallon, so I can pinpoint when it was taken. Sometimes you'll see it like cheaper and cheaper. That just gives you an idea of how quickly and how frequently. I've actually like checked out my own house, and I can say, oh, that's right, that's that time that I had that lumber delivered, and I had to leave it in the driveway for a while before I was able to like move it inside for that project. Okay, so that was definitely this day and this date. So you have to keep those cars moving. It's like painting a bridge. Once you get from one end to the other, it's time for you to go back to the first end and start all over again.
So an update maybe on the iPhone 7 lack of a jack scandal. Here's Apple Insider has claimed that they have obtained a Barclays Bank research memo that says this will for the first time give the iPhone 7 stereo audio. And what? Don't we have stereo audio in our headsets?
There's only one speaker.
The phone. On. Yeah. I get it. Two speakers, and that's because there's no headphone.
So your hamster will get beautiful audio separation from those two speakers.
It's like Dolby Atmos. It's going to bounce everything off the walls.
Now I'm in the left. Now I'm in the right. Okay.
Most of us watch video sideways anyway, so it'll be one hand. We'll get like beautiful top-bottom sound.
I do that all the time with my phones, is cover the speakers, and then you go, why can't I have my hand on it. Just looking to see if there's anything else.
Just like people at Apple drink.
Vivo announces a native app for Apple TV, content curated by your taste. Vivo, of course, is the music channel that labels love. Was originally on YouTube, but I think they've kind of, I don't know how they're related. Apple Pay is coming to China now that it's in Canada, China, and this week, and France later this year.
Excellent.
We've translated it into French. Apple Pay. Do they call it the pomme de pay?
Pompeii.
Vulcan, you want to talk about that? Nothing much to say. I put a bookmark in there because this is the replacement for OpenGL. Vulcan, it's called Vulkan. Alas, doesn't work on Apple.
I mean, that's an implementation detail. I'm sure, I don't believe there's anything restricting it other than someone has to go and do it.
Yeah.
But, okay. Or maybe they need to do a system level. I don't know. Not a graphics person. But it's like Apple's got Metal now. Metal is Apple's low-level graphics framework. Right. And Vulkan is what people who aren't Apple and want to have.
Apple was this big supporter of OpenGL. But it never worked well. Apple's drivers were terrible.
They implemented it from more of a math science perspective. They never implemented it for gaming, which has different parameters. But more so, Apple's not good at waiting. It's sort of like, you know, they play well with open standards when they believe that those standards are sort of established. When they need something and they're not going to wait 3 years, they're just going to roll out Metal. That's sort of like they're an urgent sort of company.
Apple is.
Well, I think that a lot of the OS also was based on used the OpenGL for a lot of things, and as a result, Apple was unwilling to let those drivers be developed by anybody because of while theirs is behind for games, what they were really worried about is making sure that everything else that they're using it for is working.
60 frames per second.
You've been buying Apple stock. Now let's buy some Apple bonds. Apple is issuing more bonds, a new bond series to raise money for further stock buybacks and dividend payments. You might wonder why a company with more than $200 billion in their pocket is borrowing money, but it does make those bonds A-plus certified. They, in 2013, raised $17 billion, $12 billion in 2014, $8 billion last year. They have executed, get this, they've been planning to buy $200 billion in stock back. They've executed $153 billion in stock buyback already.
They could only repatriate all that money. They would not need the bonds.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
They should maybe issue the bonds in Ireland.
Well, Apple Ireland has a lot of money. Apple America has been spending money. So they're now borrowing because Apple Ireland has all the money and they can't bring it home.
Oh, you see.
And I'm wondering, we're seeing that they're opening a research firm in Hyderabad, which I think that there's rumored to be upwards of 4,500 people working there eventually. And I'm wondering whether that also allows them to spend that international capital somewhere outside of the United States on R&D. And I think that one of the things we have to be kind of careful of as we look at right now, things are designed in the U.S. or designed in California, but then produced, in China. And it starts off because it's cheaper that they did it, the people did it in China. But now it is true that capacity is a big issue, that you can only have this many people in those areas. I think that the issue that you may get into as people keep on moving this work to India is they started, and a lot of this, the cost, the advantage of programming in India, the advantages of those types of things have reduced. They're not the same cost advantages they used to be, but the amount of sheer number of people being trained for that, again, could put India in a position that China's in now, but in the area of programming and development. And as you see more folks going that direction, it's something that people thinking about U.S. jobs should worry about.
It's a new office in Canada, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Ottawa.
Well,
and
you know what?
So when all that money can be...
There's good programmers. They're maybe easier to find good engineers outside
there
the
There might
US.
Be a QNX office down the street that that may not be as employable as it used to be. Mm-hmm. So.
Maybe.
But I think that's, but we should just look at, both the tax policies and immigration policies in the United States are helping to really pick that, accelerate that process of, keeping money overseas where you want to keep on spending it overseas and also, having it harder to bring people in just means that it doesn't mean that we start hiring more people here. I think that almost every useful programmer, if they don't have a job working for a company, it's because they don't want it or there's something else going on. I mean, it's, it's, there's so much demand, for programmers. I think that's, and I know that may seem harsh, but I think that, what we're doing right now, I think is going to be problematic. We can't find enough programmers.
Yeah,
that are capable of doing what we need to do. We can find programmers. We can't find the ones that can program, cleanly and quickly.
It's time to talk about Squarespace, and then we will get your picks of the week, fellas. Line them up. I know I'm going to be picking these fine Purdue Animal Sciences livestock judging gloves. Everybody should have a pair. Before you touch pig genitals, get the glove.
Just remember, Leo, that when you have one finger of that glove pointing at someone else, it's got three fingers pointing back at yourself.
You. That's right. Whatever that means. Our show today, unless you're pointing like this, and then it's only two fingers. Our show today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the place to make your next website, whether you're a business, a band, a restaurant, a plumber, a blogger, a photographer. There's a Squarespace template with your name on it. Well, not literally your name, but boy, it is the best way to start your site. You're using the state-of-the-art, not only the best designers, but the best engineers. So in that template, baked in, e-commerce that looks as good as your site does. It looks just like your site because it is. It's mobile responsive, so you don't have a separate mobile site. You have automatically, you have, you know, a site that works on any size screen. That's built in. It's baked into the templates. And, of course, I love the cover page. I use that. That was the first thing that got me excited about Squarespace is creating a cover page. But now I want to show you a nice little treat. We've mentioned that you can, of course, make a site without being an HTML guru. But look over here. This I've logged into my Squarespace site. If you go to the settings and you go to the advanced settings, there's a box you're going to want to check out if you're a developer. Squarespace Developer Platform. Turn that on and you have access. They leave it off so that, you know, people can create Squarespace sites without any expertise, without any HTML or CSS or JavaScript. But man, you turn that on, suddenly you have all the code in your developer template. You can use Git or SFTP to connect and edit your HTML. You can do so many cool things. For instance, there's a JSON API to output content from the CMS. You've got access to HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You can start with one of the existing templates. In fact, there's a great way to learn is to look at those templates and see what they do, or use the base template and get all the features. Just register as a developer, flip the developer toggle, and you're in, and you're coding. And that means that Squarespace could even be, and I know a lot of people that do this, a business for you, setting up great websites for your customers. Squarespace is the place to create a great website. When you buy an annual plan, which I do, of course, you get the custom domain name free. And, of course, commerce. Basic plan and advanced plan with business features like shipping and inventory control. It just gets better and better. And that's one of the nice things about Squarespace. It's hosting plus software. And the software just kind of automatically gets better all the time. And more features are added all the time. I want you to visit Squarespace. Get your free trial on at squarespace.com. You can even import content from your old site just to see what it would look like. But don't forget to use the promo code MacBreak when you buy, because that gives you 10% off. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. You should. Loving to Squarespace. I turn off developer mode because I don't need it. I could do it, but everything I want to do is kind of there, built in. It's so sweet. All right. Time for picks of the week. Who should I start with? I need a four-sided coin or a 22-sided die. Let's start with Rene Ritchie from because he's from the Great White North.
So, yeah. So north. If you go to Game of Thrones, we're a little bit north of that wall.
It's perfect. Winter's coming. Winter never left.
Winter is here. Yeah, winter never goes. Stupid winter. This is a pick I've picked many times before, but they've got a new program out today that I really like, and it's 1Password. I know some people use LastPass, some people use other things. Whatever you use, this kind of stuff is awesome. A few months ago, they rolled out 1Password Teams, which would let you share passwords with other people in your company, and people started asking for a version of that for families. So today they launched 1Password Families. So I think it's like $5 a month, and everyone in the family gets a copy of 1Password, and you can choose which passwords you keep just for you and which passwords you share with the family. And this has been a really big problem. We get a lot of mail about this kind of thing because people, you know, they like the Netflix password, and there's a bunch of passwords that they just, for convenience sake, they don't want to leave out in the open, but they do want everyone to have access to. And with this, you know, they're on many, many different platforms. So if you have a mixed technology family, it works really, really great. You just get 1Password. You store all your passwords for everything that's important. The ones that are just for you keep in your sealed vault, and the ones that your whole family needs access to, you put in the family vault. And that way,
how do I get that? Because I want to do that.
It's a subscription. So I believe
is it an upgrade
subscription?
Oh, okay.
There's Yeah, so there's a, if you go to the 1Password blog, they have a big article on it this morning that went up that explains sort of the process.
Because this is really, really a great thing to have. LastPass has sharing as well. And you need that because you exactly as you say, some stuff's yours, but you, but the Netflix password, my son's always asking me to text it to him. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Or the, in some families, the kids are old enough, and you want one, like you want everyone to know the iTunes password. There's just, there's certain
and I
things.
Want my wife to have access to all my stuff, my accounts. Yep. It's the easiest, safest way to do that. So that's great. $5 a month. That's great.
And then if you update it because there's some problem with it and it says you have to update the account, then she'll know about it immediately. It'll be updated in her vault, too. She won't have to call you, oh, did you change the password?
Right.
Or get afraid that something's happened, someone's trying to hack the account. It just makes life better for everybody.
You know, the thing that can that's really convinced me in 1Password, almost all the other vaults keep a copy of your vault on their servers because it's more convenient. And 1Password is one of the few, that and like the open source KeePass, that let you put the vault where you want to have it. So it's not on their servers. It's on whatever. So I keep it on, not only on my secured Samsung, but on a highly secured cloud that's my own cloud. And of course, it's always encrypted anyway. So even if somebody got it, and that I think that really lowers the attack surface because instead of saying, "Oh gosh, we'll just go to the password vault company and download everybody's vaults and just hammer on them," yep. They'd have to go one. They'd have to attack you. They'd go onesie twosie, figure out where your vault is and download it. And I think that that's really good. Now, on the other hand, that their Android support, I wish it were a little bit better. But
they're a long time Mac company who sort of realizes they have to be everywhere. Yeah. So that's like the growing pain is that they're moving.
I've talked to them. I said, look, you got to support this new OP vault. That's the only thing missing, by the way. You got to support the OP vault format for Android. I mean, you can use their Agile vault, the old vault. Agile Bits is, are they Canadian?
Yeah, they're from Toronto. They're Ralston and Dave. And what I like is like they're super responsive. They're always at WWC. They're always at these places. And like the fingerprint technology comes out. And now 1Password on my phone is better than my Mac because you press the action extension.
I love that.
1Password pops up. Press your thumb on it. Yeah. It authorizes you, fills the password, and you're done.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It supports Android fingerprint too.
Yeah.
So they
have an SDK so apps can actually add it in because some apps don't give you access to share sheets or any other way to access that sort of a trigger, but they can put a little 1Password button on there and then you just press that and you're in again.
I also love it that you can keep the vault. So I keep the vault in my private store that no one else can get, but if you want, you could have your phone log into that. Or you can do Wi-Fi syncing, which I think is really interesting.
They have a service called Watchtower, and I go through this every year. It shows you all your weak passwords. It shows you duplicate passwords. Yeah. It shows you passwords from companies that have had attacks in the last year, and they might have gotten your password even if you weren't notified about it. And then just every couple of months, I do a security audit and update all that stuff. It's great.
Yeah. I love seeing competition now because all of them are getting better and better all the time, and I think it's really good. And I have to say, if you're not using LastPass, 1Password is definitely it. And actually, I'm starting to think maybe 1Password is the way to go here.
Yeah, I used to use Apple Keychain for all my like secure notes and secure passwords, and that was the last Apple app that I realized that I don't want to standardize a really big resource on one certain simple platform. And I switched to 1Password, and I've not regretted it one moment. It's just really it's so easy to use.
I could use Keychain because I only have Apple technology. But what I don't like is that there's no master password, which 1Password offers. So you have to put in a thumbprint or a password to get access. With Apple Keychain, they just assume that once you've unlocked the device, that's fine. And I might be someone on the street going, help, I'm locked out. I need to call my mom. And I want to be able to give them my phone without giving them my credit cards, my passwords.
Right. Yeah, I've been very impressed, I have to say. Very, very impressed. And, you know, I have to say I've been looking at it after LastPass got acquired. And the simple fact that LastPass has my database on their servers and 1Password does not, I think by itself is probably a good reason to switch.
And if you're worried, like if convenience is so important, like you can put it on iCloud, you can put it on Dropbox. They give you all those sorts of options. So it just depends on your comfort level and what you want in terms of security and convenience.
I keep it on my file transporter. That's the personal cloud thing. And no one has access to that. That's encrypted in transit, encrypted at place, and it's in my office, and it's at my home, and they sync, but it's never in the cloud. And I think that works pretty well. All right. One password. How about you, Alex Lindsay? What do you got for us?
So I'm actually, all this talk about Apple's products that people don't like, I actually, and then someone picked on one of them, and I just had to say that I have to make it a pick just so that I
can defend it, baby.
Refute it. So someone was talking about how bad Preview is, and I don't know. I guess for them, whatever they were doing causes it to but I use Preview every day for one thing.
Me too.
So I look at stuff, but I use it every day for one thing, and that's to sign documents. So I want to make sure people understand how, you know, this is a little tip, a little bit of a thing. In Preview, all you have to do is go to your tools to annotate signature. If you don't have a signature in there, you take a Sharpie or anything or a pen. Then you sign a white piece of paper and you show it to your webcam.
Yeah.
And you show it to your little eyesight. And then your signature is now in, you know, is there in Preview.
I did not, I have to admit, I did not know about that. That is awesome.
I know, no. So the thing is that it, and so I have, so.
Actually, I did because, you know, I see my signatures in it.
It used to,
I forgot.
It used to be a nightmare. People would be like, send this back to me signing. I'd be like, oh, now I have to figure out how to use a fax machine, and I have to do this thing, and I have to sign it, and then I have to scan it, and then there's PDF, whether it's Reader or whatever, but they're all heavy. The thing is there's nothing easier or faster than you get a form, you open it up in Preview, you can add a couple text things really easily, like, oh, I'm going to fill in the date and type my name, and then I throw my signature on, and then I just save it out, and it's done. And it's a PDF, and then I email it back to him. And I email that kind of stuff back. The only thing that slows me down now is, like, notarization. I guess, you know, the notaries are the thing that slows me down. But if you ask me to sign something digitally, it's like, bam, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a –
I so love it that you can – so you can use a trackpad. So you can actually sign the trackpad.
You can sign the trackpad, but you can also – the crazy thing is just take a – you can just literally draw. Yeah, you can do that. Or you
That's not a really good way to do it. But it's – you know what? The truth is it's good enough.
It's good enough, but – the other thing is you could take a picture. You use the camera. So you literally just sign your signature on a piece of white paper.
And then hold it up.
And you hold it up, and it just, boom. It goes, okay. And the best thing to use for that is a Sharpie, because you get a nice, thick, dark line. And you'll get a nice, there you go. And you sign it. Here we go.
Okay, it's going to be backwards. And you sign. Can you sign it big?
Yeah, you can sign it big.
All right.
Because it's just going to scale
this
it up.
This is not my legal signature. No, it is, but it doesn't work. Anybody who uses a signature. But it's getting it backwards. Oh, my God. Look at that.
Okay. Yep.
Holy camoly magnaboli. And it looks just like now, the other one.
but now when you have a – just open up any document in there, and you can just – you just say add signature, and it just pops up, and you can scale it and move it around and put it right where it needs to be. And it's this one little feature that between this and adding text to the just adding text over top of whatever's already in the PDF. So I'm not trying to figure out how to deconstruct the PDF or anything else. And there's lots of great tools out there, you know, that a PDF, you know, that you can do other things with PDFs. But something built into your Mac that is easy to use, and and someone was, I don't know who was doing it, was they were throwing Preview under the bus, and I was like, are you kidding me? I use that every day. It saves my life every day. Not saves my life, but saves me like minutes, which, you know, I have to sign a lot of things. So it's saving me 5 or 10 minutes every single time, saves me like hours a day.
So it's tools, annotate, signature. You pick a signature. I'm going to now sign my Dell manual.
There you go. Drag it around. See?
It's now, and oh, by the way, hold the shift key down and you can scale it.
Yeah,
big or little. They did a nice job. That's nice.
Not only that, but it's great for forms filling too, because it will sense that if you have a PDF form to fill out, it will sense where the lines are, so you can just click on the lines and type information.
And this is transparent automatically, which is really cool.
Yeah. I use it all the time too. When I get like NDAs I need to sign or loan agreements for hardware, it's like it used to be. Back in the old days, it was. You know, I kind of would like to have this new $8,000 laptop 4 months before anybody else gets it, but I got to find where do I put my fax machine? Do I have paper?
Totally.
Do I have? Whereas this is like it comes in and 5 minutes later it goes back out again.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I use Preview for conversion. I use Preview for rescaling. It's like because you don't. I've got all kinds of apps for graphics, but sometimes all I want to do is get something under Twitter's 2 megabyte limit, and that's all I need to do.
You're right. Was it Walt Mossberger? Somebody was saying how bad Preview was, and I was kind of surprised because I thought this is. I love Walt.
I don't think it actually works well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I use it to write dates too, like as a signature. I'll write the date out so that on the document it looks like I signed and dated the document.
Oh, you are one smart cookie.
When I sold my house in L.A., they were sending me documents so much crazy.
And this is what's really sad, is like as if that proves that this that was you. We have the technology. We have public key cryptography. You can use real digital signatures that are much harder to fake, but no. We're going to fax you a document and ask you to sign it.
Or you create an initial, too. It's like an initial stamp.
Initial, have an initial date and full signature, yeah.
Yeah, and I just went through the document.
I do that with PDF Pen Pro, which I use, which is a great PDF program that does all sorts of extra stuff. But, boy, it's nice just to have it come with the operating system.
And I have PDF Pen Pro, too, which I like and I use for other things. It's a great app.
Because you can have a whole library of stamps. And,
right.
Yeah.
But this is just for something that's already built in.
So easy.
And people go, well, how do I get my signature in there? I don't want to sign my trackpad. I'm like, you just sign a piece of paper and show it to the computer and you're done.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Thank you, Alex Lindsay. Mr. Andy Anatko, don't give me another thing to buy because you're on a roll and I'm on a tear.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to tell you that I bought something last week that I've really been in love with and I'm glad that I bought it.
Pretty soon we're going to be tweeting, improved. Mark Zuckerberg, call me, I need money.
Has Kanye been watching our show? Maybe it's too many Alex recommendations that he's been buying without looking.
Well, Alex's was free with zero Alex's this week, so he's redeemed himself.
Well, of course, it runs best on a brand new 5K iMac, of course, whether you want to look at the processor upgrade. I've been doing a bunch of like upgrades around the office, and I'm talking about like ergonomic sort of things. And so one of the things I've been meaning to get for a while is a really good keyboard, because I had a bunch that I liked, but they stopped making them, like good Logitech keyboards. And then so I sort of like switched to just like by default using like decent but, you know, notebook style Bluetooth keyboards, but I finally got like a good good keyboard with Cherry switches. This is the Code keyboard from WASD.
I want it
exactly. And the so best beautiful. Thing I can say about it is that it's as good as the free keyboard you used to get with a Mac like in 1984, because this sort of technology they just don't give you away anymore. So it has these really cool, the brand name is Cherry. They've been making key switches forever. And what you can get from it is that if I just type like this, you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Oh man, it's that's like the sound, baby.
Mechanical switches that don't have, they're not like notebook style switches, which have like a little rubber bumper and underneath it that sort of bounces down, then bounces back up again. The tactile feedback is just wonderful. The fact that each of these keys is like dished out, you can see a little bit. Your fingers just find where to go. There's no misstriking whatsoever. It's heavy and it has like big rubber feet on the bottom of it so it doesn't slide around on the keyboard. It has backlighting and you can set the level of backlighting. And even if you unplug it and plug it back in again, it will remember that backlighting level. It's just lovely. The other cool thing is that you can decide it is completely upgradable. It is completely serviceable. And when you order it, you can decide what kind of key switches you want inside there. These are Cherry Brown switches, which are pretty much the most comfortable for most people, the most comfortable switch. If you like the really loud clacky, clacky, clack, you can get the blues. You can also get green switches. And they will actually also add like O-ring dampeners in there, so it'll be almost completely silent. There's not a bad thing about it, but of course, I can't use this while I'm sometimes, you know, we're all like sort of looking things up and like reading like the next article or whatever. You can't use this while podcasting because people will listen to it. It behooves you to like think about what kind of keys you want. They will also, this isn't the one from WASD, the manufacturers, but they will actually sell you a sampler pack of just key switches. So this one is from a different company, but it has samples of like four different kinds of Cherry key switches. And it also came with like a little bundle of O-rings. So you can actually test how each one of these feels and finally say, okay, I want the brown switches, but I want blue O-rings underneath it. And that gives me the best response. Also, because it's designed, I mean, these aren't like sealed up notebook keyboards. So if it gets dirty, you can yank off the keycap. It actually comes with a keycap removal tool and clean it. If for whatever reason, let's say you're being a little bit too Hessian aggression when you're playing a game and you break a key, you don't have to throw out the whole keyboard. You can just simply replace that one key switch. You can even, like, if you want the escape key to be a different color, you can pull the escape key and buy like a red one. Do exactly what you want. Love this to death. So many nice little touches too. Like, this is obviously a USB keyboard. It's not wireless, but they've actually like put channels underneath it so that you can route the cable to go left, right, or straight up. Another thing.
Second USB port for the mouse?
No, unfortunately.
That's one thing about the Apple keyboard.
Yeah, that's the only thing. That's the only thing I wish it had, because that keeps clutter kind of a little bit better under control. But that's really the only thing that I think that you could improve this. It is Apple compatible. It's also Windows compatible. Actually, and I'm such an old geek, but it made me so happy. This is the first device I've bought since like 1990. Where, look at that, dip switches.
Which are like for settings. And you can disable the control key with the dip switch.
You can disable the control key. You can make the caps lock key do something else if you don't use caps lock.
Swap alt with command if you're on a Mac and you want it to be Mac-ish.
Exactly. Unfortunately, it doesn't. Another thing it would be lovely to have, but it's not a big deal. It doesn't have like a double, like if you look at the legend for like the alt key, it doesn't have like two different pieces of artwork for the command key and alt. It's just alt. But that's okay. I mean, it's not like your hands know where it is. You don't have to actually go looking for it. It's not cheap, but it might be the last keyboard that you'll buy for 10 years.
Which color did you get?
It's only available in the keys I got were the brown switches,
cherry brown.
And it, to be honest, it did take me, because I've been typing on nothing but notebook style keys for like a year. It did take me a good few hours before I got my sea legs back. But after that, it had the weirdest effect on me. I do almost all my writing on my MacBook. I often will like start something like in bed upstairs when I wake up, and then like I'll make myself my English muffin, and I'll be like continuing to work like on the sofa, and maybe I'll be working like through lunch on the sofa. I enjoy typing on this keyboard so much. Now I'm actually going into the office and like starting my day like a real business person, like sitting behind a desk, because I just prefer this to the feel of the notebook. I actually feel a little bit disappointed that I actually, when I take my MacBook out of the house, and I have to actually use the MacBook's keyboard. But I don't want to be one of those people who goes to like Starbucks with a loud, clacky, like 81-pound keyboard, because that would be. I got enough.
And
I got
an iMac on your shoulder.
As it is. Yeah. So, I recommend it really, really highly. I just don't know if there are people who have never used a proper keyboard before. And if you will just never, you're just at this point, you're just not even house trained for proper mechanical key switches anymore. But I just got to say that this is one of the best. The keyboard I got, they have it in. This is the 87 key version, or what's often called the 10 keyless format, where it's an extended keyboard. The only thing it's missing is it doesn't have a numeric keypad, but it does have like all the navigation keys on it. You can also get the full like 101 Saratoga flight deck size one. But this one is, I think, $145. I'd have to check. You can go to codekeyboards.com for the straight.
The one you got is $150. They have a $145.
The one I got is $145.
Oh,
the one that's the 87 key mechanical.
Oh, 87 key brown. Yeah, brown. Yeah. If you get 104,
the 104 keyboard is $150, just $5 more. Yeah. But like I said, I mean, I had a problem because I loved. There's a Logitech had a line of keyboards I really liked. I felt like I'm stupid for not buying them for $70 when they got cleared out, because all that was wrong with it, my keyboard, is that one key, just the letter A, stopped working, and so I had to throw out the entire keyboard. Whereas with this, I love it, and I feel like if for the next 10 years, if I should break a key, I'll just fix it, and because it's just so nicely made.
Very, very sweet.
Wow. I've been looking at the DOS keyboard.
One other thing I didn't mention, this isn't realize that this keyboard cable is not wired in. This is just a micro USB connector. So if you want to order like off of Amazon, like an 8-foot keyboard to reach wherever you want to go, or if you just need a 3-foot key, it's not like something that's wired in where you're kind of stuck with this curly springy thing. There's so many little detail. I actually did consider the DOS keyboard. I went with this one because I liked how plain it was. The DOS keyboard looks a little bit stylish for what I want. Also, you can't get it in the 87 key version. You can only get it with the Saratoga style, and I find that I have to reach too far from the mouse if I have the full extended keyboard. Plus, I never use the numeric keypad anyway. It does have like nice dedicated keys for volume and Mac control. On this keyboard, it's a secondary function. So if I want to if I want to mute the audio, I have to hit the menu key and this other key instead of just having one thing to slap.
It's funny, every time I hear DOS keyboard, I always wonder if Porsche Design made a laptop, it'd be like DOS laptop.
DOS laptop.
Titanium, DOS laptop.
Yes, DOS
made
keyboard.
With function, DOS laptop.
Yeah, I can't use anything that clicks at all in the in my office here because I'm doing a radio show. I don't want anybody to know I'm Googling the answer. But but at home, I don't care. That's yeah. Nice.
If you try the blue keys are a trip because there's only one other place you ever hear keys like that. And so whenever I was trying someone who has like a blue keyboard, I want to say, okay, and will we be desiring a special meal on this flight? Okay,
is blue louder? So blue is the clickiest.
Blue is really, really loud. If you look online, there's actually there are a lot of keyboard geeks who will have just nothing but thousands and thousands of messages on this technology. Someone made this.
Oh,
really
I know people
cool
are
animation.
So serious about this stuff.
Well, some people are really passionate about the things they're passionate about, and so there's actually like cutaway like animations of what each type of key looks like when it makes contact. The blue actually has a separate extra little kink in the key switch post that is designed to do nothing but create a clicking sound when you get to the contact point.
It's like engine rev, right? It's like Apple extended 2 sound. Yeah. We got to put a click thing in it.
And some people just hate the people in the next cubicle and they want to drive them all away.
It's a very Dwight Schrute so thing great. To do.
Yeah.
Wow. He's, now I'm tempted.
I really feel like I'm working when my brain is just here. It makes this white noise when I'm working, and I type at 110 words per minute. And so when I'm really working, it's like white noise that shuts out everything from the outside.
Oh, remember that old typewriter sound, and you hear the ting at the end of it, and that just sounds so great. Ting, 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 ting. Yep.
It's nice, especially if you got a spouse or if you got roommates. It's good to basically say, no, I'm definitely not just chilling out and like binge watching TV. I am actually working, as you can hear from the noise that I'm making as I work.
It's an MP3, but you can hear it.
Exactly. At least I'm taking the time to at least put up the pretense that I'm not goofing off.
I do wish the return key had a ding on it, though. That would be kind of cool. The DOS keyboard does have USB ports for the mouse on it.
Yes.
Which is one thing nice. To recommend
DOS
it.
DOS keyboard.
And almost working in our chat room says there is a DOS keyboard with just 87 keys.
Okay, I didn't see it.
And there's a DOS keyboard has the sound bytes if you want to know what the differences are.
Oh, nice.
So this is the cherry mix.
Let's hear the brown.
But this is cherry.
Holy cow. That's the brown. Here's the blue, the louder one. Oh, jeez. That almost hurts my ears.
Yeah. And if these keyboards are a little bit too pricey for you, there are a lot of keyboards, especially intended for gamers, that use these exact same key switches. You can find a brown Cherry MX keyboard for as little as $60 or $70. It might not be as nice as this, but it will have the same key switch technology. I'm not sad that I spent the money for this one. I'd actually been using one that a friend had. I borrowed it for a day, and it was like, okay, I think I can spend $145 for this again. It's not just, hey, I had an impulse to buy a keyboard. There is a movement inside this office to, well, let's take things that are uncomfortable, that make it uncomfortable to like work here for 8 hours, and make them more comfortable. And so this was one of the first things I bought, and it really paid off handsomely.
I might change my pick of the week real quickly because I just got a Apple Watch update from the Quartz app. If you guys played with this, it's really interesting. It's a news app from Quartz.com, QZ.com, which I think is a great news site. But the app is the strangest news app I've ever used, and I kind of like it. So it's can you have the over-the-shoulder shot there? All right, go ahead and show it. So you're chatting with your news guy, basically. So it says, good afternoon. The Eurozone is about to ditch its highest value banknote. And then you can click a emoticon, in this case a euro, or you can click the right arrow and find out more. Or in my case, who cares, you go to next. And then the next story comes up. Enough is enough. The Saudis and Russians have agreed to freeze oil input. New emoticons with the Saudi flag, the Russian flag, a barrel, and a graph. Want to read more? You click the right button, and it'll actually pull up the story. These are not all from QZ. In this case, this is a Reuters article. Next, what else is big in the news these days? The Parmesan cheese in your pasta could be dosed with wood pulp. Then a picture of cheese and an emoticon. Oh, no! The scream emoticon. Anything else? I say back to it. I'm chatting with the news app. Squashing cockroaches may reveal the secret to building an indestructible robot. Hey, don't do that.
Ah.
Ow. There's an animated GIF of a cockroach being squished, but not to the point of death. They're actually very good at that there. And then police on the Isle of Wight suspect alcohol was involved in a Triceratops kidnapping. And here's a picture of the what? And then there's
Who thought indestructible robots were a good idea? I just want to ask that.
Yeah, right. Right.
What happened to the super destructible?
And the Seattle Aquarium canceled its Valentine's Day octopus orgy due to fears of cannibalism. Okay. By the time you get
the Turing test?
Yeah. The end of it, it will say, you're all caught up. Check back later. And then a picture of Lady Gaga doing Bowie for some reason, just because it's fun. So it is all the charm of a messaging conversation with a fast-fingered, emoticon-using, animated, gift-loving friend who happens to be up on the latest news. I think it's very interesting. I don't find myself using it every day.
It's Slackbot who pays attention to the news.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really an interesting thing. Now, why they have only got it on iOS, you could do this anywhere. This is, once you get the effort, I'm sure they'll do it on other platforms. But right now, it's only on iOS. It's free. It's from Quartz. Quartz. And I'll save the other pick for next week. Thought I'd mention that. Everybody, thank you so much for being here. Andy Iannocco, Chicago Sun-Times. I've now purchased a massively clicky keyboard thanks to you.
I hope your marriage survives it.
Well, there'll be no question what I'm doing in my office.
There you go.
Your doors are closed. Yeah, but I'm going to talk to my mom on Skype. It's not going to be good, though. She's going to know I'm not paying attention. Thanks to Alex. Go ahead.
No, I was saying I've done podcasts with people, and then I hear like click, 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 click as I'm saying something, and then I have to just pause and say, I'm sorry, am I interrupting you?
Notice, I'm very careful not to make lots of clicky noises.
Exactly.
I might be playing with my gloves, but I'm not making clicky noises. Thanks to Alex Lindsay from Pixel Core. Always great to see you and your warehouse of
it's
doom.
Good to be here. And we'll keep on playing with the background. And,
I like
and playing
this
with
one.
The system. The system, I have to admit, was only running for about a half an hour before the show, so we'll improve.
You know what? It sounds great now.
No, so there was a so when we lost power and I was looking at the Skype TX box, while I had turned off all the effects, the gain was turned up right. Very high on my Skype TX box. So I turned that down and
sounds much better.
Now it sounds better.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yep. No, you fixed it. What was the?
I'm obsessed.
You know, there was a pop and you went black.
So we have some very for the thing that we're working on that's over, you know, over
you
there.
You mean that fusion reactor? The
yeah. So it takes up a lot of power in the building, and so when they turned it on during the show, and we have to kind of figure out where all the circuits are when you turn it on because it kind of takes up all the power.
Tesla coil.
And so we didn't have the circuits mapped out quite correctly, and so I ended up without any power.
So basically, you're saying that the BB-8 droid takes a lot of power when it's on recharge mode.
It's on the fast charge mode that it really becomes problematic. If you use,
I thought it was a tokamak.
It's fine.
It's a USB-C cable.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the fusion reactor we were looking at with the? What was it? Stellarator. That's right. I think this is what. This is what Alex is up to, is creating his own Stellarator fusion reactor.
Howard's Iron Man suit?
Yeah, we've just given
this
it
this thing is, yeah, we were exactly. Looking, this is what's really behind Alex.
That's actually, yeah, I mean, we couldn't show that part of the warehouse, you know, but we like to call it the bell rod. That's, you know.
Incredible. Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com.
Yes,
he's in Winnipeg, so you don't have to be.
That's true.
And he's frozen for our sins.
I think, like, again, last year they had temperatures that were lower than Mars. And when your temperatures get extraterrestrial, they should just evacuate you. You should just
lower
no longer
than
humans
Mars.
Should just live there anymore. The low in Winnipeg was lower than the high in Mars that day.
It's freaking Please. Crazy.
Abandon.
Abandon ship immediately. Yep. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. By the way, one nice feature of this Stellarator nuclear fusion device, it's pretty warm. It reached 1 million degrees centigrade Celsius.
Move it here.
Yeah, you need it.
Yep.
You need it. By the way, I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. And we'll see you next time. Yeah, get back to work because break time is over.